final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. A woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those Muslim old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway night, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
God's name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Yeah, goody goody gunshots.
Yeah, we're live, goody goody gum shops. Heavens to Murgatroyd. There was something else intelligent I was getting ready to say before we went on there. Ah, you're listening to Mad Science Show here on www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to www.shazizradio. There's I always hate saying the www's, man. Is there a shortcut?
World Wide Web?
Yeah, World Wide Web, shazizradio.com/superchat.
It's not even necessary, really. That's more like somebody trying to capitalize on controlling the web.
Yeah, just...
If you just type an address in, and then type .com, .net, .org, whatever behind it, it should pull it up automatically. You never really needed to put that www or the HTTP or PS on the end of it.
Oh.
Or at the beginning.
Well, I wish I'd have known that. That saved me a lot of headache, man.
Yeah, the browser will automatically insert 90% of that stuff.
Doggone Google, you know, they, and all these HTTPSs, a lot of people don't realize the HTTPS is the secure site. And so I go to my own site, which, you know, apparently you got to buy a certificate to say that you're secure. Even though the other ones out there who even are secure are the ones spying on everybody. Now I go to my own site and it's telling me, I blocked this site because it's not secure. You know, and I said, the heck you say, I'm getting my... Oh, well. So that's modern technology for you, man. But let's jump back in time here for a second, because the first video link that I posted over there in the superchat.html over there at shazizradio.com was a civil defense video from 1951. Talk about duck and cover, man. And basically, everybody who knows history knows what was going on around that time of the season, so to speak, or year, or whatever life. There was a threats of atomic war and that kind of stuff. So they're teaching everybody how to, like, if you see the flash, drop down and lean up against the wall, cover your neck and your head, and duck and cover, you know. And I think I even typed in a doggone comment in the deal. I said I actually think I lost some IQ points watching this video. I mean, come on.
Oh, man.
You know, duck and cover for a nuke, really? You know, the modern...
What? People don't think that they're Indiana Jones. They can basically ride a nuclear blast in a refrigerator.
Oh. Do you remember, a long time ago, there's this video. I can't remember what this guy, his name is, but there's a funny clip out there where this guy, some crazy mad guy on a military base went crazy and decided to start World War III. Well, before they could get them all recalled, one of them smashed their radio, so they never got the recall message to not drop the bomb. And so they're flying over this place, and they try to drop the bomb, and it won't release. So this guy gets down there, and he's sitting on top of the atomic bomb, and he's banging on the deal that clamps it to the thing, and finally it comes loose. And so here he is, riding this atomic bomb down to the ground, waving his cowboy hat in the air, going, yee-haw! I'm like, oh, man. I can't remember what the name of that doggone movie, but there's a clip on YouTube about it. Just Google man rides atomic bomb down to the ground or something like that. But anyway, I think the best case scenario is we just don't drop no bombs to begin with. That would be the best go. This whole duck
war, war games, man, the only way to win is not to play.
Yeah, exactly.
For no one to play, you know, do not play.
You know, it's back in the, I guess back in the day, I mean, you could always trust your government, of course, but back in the day, you know, I guess it would probably be beneficial for those who really weren't all that bright in science or whatever to believe that, yeah, if you get underneath your school desk and you duck and cover, that your chances of survival is a lot better. But gives
them something to basically feel like they're safe, so they don't panic and end up hurting themselves.
Yeah, so as soon as somebody, like a camera flash goes off, and everybody either ducks and covers or panics and runs, because it's atomic bomb.
Kind of like
the concept of the old War of the Worlds, whenever they played that, the H.G. Wells War of the Worlds, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they played that and people heard it on the radio and automatically thought, you know, that we were...
The world was being invaded, yeah.
Yeah. There was actually people got shot
yeah.
in that mess, man.
It's so, crazy, you know?
Yeah. If you look at some of those commercials and civil defense videos from way back in the 1950s, like I said, I think I lost a few IQ points watching this deal. And it's funny because you see these kids in the hallway and they're like, they ain't in their classroom, and this one particular kid, he's going to show them, you know, what to do in emergency, to duck and cover, you know. So he lays down on the floor, gets all up against the wall, you know, and ducks and covers the back of his neck and all that kind of stuff. And then you got this other kid over there, you know, I call him like maybe the Mr. Know-It-All kid. He's sitting there being real informative, telling these girls, you know, ah, that's how you do it, right? Oh, man. What a mess. You know what? If atomic bomb, I stood in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, both at their doggone museum where the atomic bomb went off, and there was literally... they had a section of a wall where the heat was so intense that it literally just basically x-rayed the person up against the wall.
Yep.
You could see right where they were standing, you know, and so if you're ducked and covered down on the wall like they was doing, and they had actually had the one scene where they showed the kids, he's walking or riding his bike home and he sees a flash or something, and then so he jumps out there by the curb and ducks and covers, and then the civil defense guy comes along later and gets him up and all that kind of stuff and said, yeah, they're there to help you out in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. So, anyway, if you want to see what history looked like, go over there and take a look at that video link there, the old 1951 civil defense. Hopefully we never have to... experience.
Try to figure out how to deal with something like that.
Yeah, best case is that it don't happen at all. And, you know, even the folks out there that, you know, are bunkering in and building themselves storm shelters or whatever, fallout shelters, you know, that's only going to buy you some time, especially with the modern day nukes. It ain't gonna do nothing as far as I'm concerned. If all these modern day nukes go off, you might as well just hang it up. It's done. That's all there is to that. The one in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, those were only 500-pound bombs, and now they got 10 and 20.
I wonder if part of the reason for doing that is because if people honestly knew that you couldn't do anything about it, how many people would save their money or invest in Wall Street and wouldn't just, like, go out and spend it all right then and there?
Well, you got a point.
Yeah, as you earn it, just spend it. Earn it and spend it. Earn it and spend it, which, you know, would shut down the whole system.
You got a point.
Because there'd be no money to basically develop, you know.
You know, I can
understand. Which is kind of what the Federal Reserve has been doing to the finances now, because you can't earn anything by putting it in a bank. I looked and I saw something. They were saying that, we got this great yield, you know, yearly yield is 1.5% interest. And the Federal Reserve is, like, you know, pushing to make sure we have at least 2% interest, but they don't want to go over that. They don't want to go over by more than 1%. So we're talking between 2% and 3% inflation. Sorry, and not interest. So you're only getting 1.5% interest, but the money that you have in your account is losing 2% of its value every year. So you're still losing 0.5% if you put your money in the bank.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're basically creating, if that was the reason they were trying to give them those shenanigans to keep them investing and saving their money and leaving it sitting around so that if something happened to them, it'd be there for the right for the pickings, they're certainly making sure that it ain't going to be around now, you know.
Well, you got a point. I could see the whole duck and cover thing for maybe a tornado or something like that and just hope for the best, but as far as an atomic bomb going off or even the thermonuclears of modern day, yeah, this ain't gonna happen.
It depends on how close you are, too.
Well, yeah, if you're far enough away, because there was, believe it or not, there were people that survived those bomb attacks.
Just like that, that whatever that was, that arch. I wonder what that arch is made out of, because it survived both of them.
Yep.
Survived a bunch of other stuff, too, you know?
It's amazing how much heat that thing actually produced when that bomb went off, because it's like big old giant steel beams just twisted up like butter, you know? It's pretty messed up. Let's hope it never happens. But anyway, yeah, that's an interesting video that I came across and wanted to share with everybody. And the next one down there is basically a step-by-step how to build a toroidal transformer. You know, like modern transformer cores, they have like laminates in there. And basically a transformer core is guiding the magnetic flux lines around, you know, to where you want them. But I like this particular, they're circular shape transformers. I like this particular one because it seems to be, to me, to be more efficient. They use these kind of transformers in some of the heavy-duty amplifier systems that they build these days. Have you seen what I'm talking about, Thomas?
I'm not sure.
Well, he takes you step-by-step through there, and he even tells you how to calculate how many turns of wire you're going to need and all that kind of stuff. And it's basically like the same kind of material that you'd use for the regular square transformers with, the laminates got the H shape, or basically they're E shaped, and then the I shape one, and then they rotate back and forth across, stacking them to build the core itself. And this one here is basically soft metal that's kind of wound around into a coil of its own, and then, you know, insulated and taped and all that kind of stuff, and then you start winding your deal around. But the way I see this particular transformer, it seems to me to be a whole lot more efficient than the the old style square ones, is why I pointed that out.
Okay.
And I think that you can actually even improve on that one itself, you know. I don't believe that we build our cores, our transformers, efficient enough. I talked about the magnetic ballast last time around, where how those things actually function, where the field is expanding and then collapsing, and then on that collapse it spikes the voltage up real high.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not only would you be, if you'd redesigned it properly, not only would you be catching the energy on the way up, but you could catch it on the way down as well, but the one on the way down would give you an energy spike. And they actually showed in there where they took a copper strip and they put it around it to try to, keep any leakage out, Like a regular transformer will actually leak some of the magnetic field, and it's not nearly as efficient. And of course, whatever frequency ranges that might put off to disrupt your other circuitry and stuff. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so basically this is kind of insulated with a piece of copper shielding on it, and it seemed to be pretty efficient. I'm wanting to try to build some, but imagine a transformer that, if you used everything the way the magnetic field is actually, if you can actually go out and buy magnet paper, and you can put the magnet paper over the top of a regular permanent magnet or even a transformer for that matter, and you'll get a one-dimensional view of what the magnetic flux lines are doing, so you can kind of tell, what's happening there.
Right.
Well, if you look at that, you'll notice that the transformer is like, it's not using all of that magnetic flux. There's a lot of waste that goes on there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you used exotic materials such as bismuth that we talked about on the prior shows or whatever, you could actually send some of that waste energy back in. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that way you get yet even more efficiency out of that same transformer.
And right.
The more efficient that transformer is, you know, obviously the lower your electrical bill is going to be. But I also think that, you know, if you could use that energy fast enough, then you wouldn't be tearing, they wouldn't be getting hot, and basically destroying the coatings on the copper wire. If that makes any sense to you at all?
Yeah.
So. You know, I would if I was going to build, which I'm hoping to do so, getting a hold of some materials. I need some decent magnet wire and stuff like that. I'm trying to recycle some and make a crude version of what I'm talking about. But if you look at how all these windings on these cores go, you know, some of them's clockwise and then some of them counterclockwise or whatever. If you could picture that field going up in the clockwise position, and then you reversed your secondary inside to the counterclockwise so that whenever it comes down, when that field collapses, it energizes that secondary pretty much the same as the first. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you could use, instead of iron cores to guide the field around, maybe use some different, some aluminum or even some bismuth to build you a core. Maybe a combination of the two. It'd just be a trial and error kind of, you know, testing to see which one's going to be the most efficient. So, you know, I'm thinking the further you could get away from the actual iron cores, the better that transfer of energy from, you know, one to the next is going to be. I kind of like the idea of not even having to have a secondary, but if you're wanting to do like step down transformers, or even step up transformers for that matter, you know, by winding thinner gauge wire, more turns on the secondary, you're going to step the voltage up. And then vice versa on the other direction, if you want to step the voltage down and keep your current up, you can customize your transformers the way you want. But making them more efficient, I think, is the key, you know.
Right.
So, anyway, that was a pretty informative video there. So if you're wanting to build your own transformers, check out that that link over there to superchat.html. And it's actually a pretty simple process. I guess the biggest key is to make sure that whenever you're winding your coils around it, you don't accidentally scratch the wire, because when you scratch that coating off, you end up with a short.
Right.
I don't understand why they didn't make some sort of better insulator for that. Because as long as that copper wire isn't touching the next coil, next loop in line, that thing would last forever, man. You know, but they're only made for be able to withstand so much temperature, and then that coating will melt off of there. And instead of, let's say, you've got 1,000 turns,
I think that's just because the material science has failed us on that. I don't think they did it intentionally on that. I was looking at that, and apparently, in calling it the enamel wire is actually kind of a misnomer. It's most of the time it's not enamel. It's like urethane, or there's a couple other substances that they're using for that are, none of them are enamels, you know.
Yeah.
So,
but if you're going to be drawing a heavy load on that, you need to try to keep it as cool as possible just because of that. It's just not going to hold up to a lot of heat.
Right. Oh, yeah, for
but
certain.
If you had something that would really seriously hold up to a lot of heat for your insulation, then, man, you could run that transformer up
Teflon.
Yeah, almost to molten, and it'd still transfer electricity, you know?
Wow, I was going to say, Teflon can't withstand that kind of temperature, but
I'm just, hypothetical.
Compared to your other plastics, it handles a lot. So,
yeah.
Maybe ceramic coatings, you know?
I'm just saying, hypothetically, you
said ceramic coatings can usually handle a lot higher temperatures, like almost enough to withstand molten aluminum, you know?
Yeah.
Those levels of temperature.
Well, you've seen those heating elements inside of electric cook stoves, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
They actually have some sort of core that inside there, that metal inside there literally does get molten. And when those things go bad, you can actually watch the stuff dripping out, man, while it's on fire. I know my wife kind of had an episode with one of that. I won't explain that right now, but there was a hydrogen explosion involved. Well, maybe I will go ahead and explain it so you electrical safety people out there can look, check this out. I always told her for a grease fire, you want to throw, you know, maybe some flour on top of a grease fire and try to put the lid over the pan and smother it out, right? But for an electrical fire, you don't want to throw anything like that up in there. You want to try to put, just shut the power off and shut the door. And so one day something went awry and the doggone oven caught fire. And so she panicked and first thing she did was throw flour up in there. And well, that didn't work. It didn't put the fire out. And so then her and my daughter standing there, and so she's still panicking because it's still on fire. And so she grabs a pitcher of water and throws that up inside there and instantaneously gets a hydrogen explosion. And my daughter said that, she thought she wasn't going to have no eyebrows when the water went up inside there and an instantly cloud of flames come flying out. It's like just barely grazed her eyebrows. So she's lucky she didn't seriously get hurt.
Right.
And so I get home and she's telling me about this whole deal, and I said, well, why didn't you just shut the door and turn off the power? She says, oh. She said, well, I remember you talking about throwing flour on it. And so I tried that first. I said, lady, you don't throw no flour or water on electrical fire. You got to deprive it of oxygen, yeah, but the best thing to do is just shut the power off and close the door in that stove and, let it put itself out.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're throwing any kind of powder on it, maybe something like sand,
Although
you might have a mess to clean up, because that electrical fire can get pretty hot and it'll melt all that down and make glass out of it.
Yeah, well, essentially what I had to clean out of that stove and to replace that element looked like pancake dough. Yeah, it was something else. Don't learn electrical safety by accident. If you get a wire fire, shut the power off. Hopefully your breaker will kick off and shut it off, and then you can put the fire out with some water when there ain't no power to it. But never throw water on a live electrical fire. Never. That's a bad plan. So, moving right along, what else do I got down there in line? Doggone it. Yeah. I can't even remember what that next video down there was. Well, let me just click on it. Okay, there we go. Ludic Science. He runs two flyback transformers in series.
And I will show you in this video the connection of two flybacks in series.
Okay, let me
each flyback can give an output of approximately 20 kilovolts. So we will get approximately 40,000 volts at the output.
All right.
I am using this machine.
This, you know, when you push on a button and says stop and it keeps on going, it's obnoxious.
Right.
Anyway, I suggest if you haven't been over to Ludic Science YouTube channel, if you're interested in how things work, go over there and subscribe to his YouTube channel. He does really good in-depth how-tos. He sits there and explains to you how to do things, and he does it in such a simple fashion. If you like this particular video here, he's actually got another video prior to that shows you how to build a driver circuit to run flyback transformers if you're interested in doing high voltage experiments. And in this one right here, he shows you how to actually connect two of them in series to take from what would have normally been 20,000 volts apiece to a combined 40,000 volts. So he's got a really good YouTube channel. I suggest if you like to watch how-to videos on building things. Go check out his channel if you're into high voltage especially. All right, so I just my brain just don't seem to be in the game today or something. And the next one down in line, a little bit more on a serious note, is remember back in the time when everybody kept talking about all the vaccines and all this kind of stuff, how the vaccines were tainted with different things and causing autism and other bad health effects?
I remember hearing something about it.
Well, it's actually a guy named Grindall. I can't even remember what the rest of it. Let me. I'm gonna have to click on that. It's gonna go too.
It's gonna refuse to stop too.
Yeah. Okay. I just hit stuff. Okay. Grindall61 out there on YouTube. He does some really good videos. He's not anti-government. He's anti-corruption. You know. He's just like everybody else. Just kind of fed up with everything. But he's got some links to a FDA government website admits that discontinued vaccines caused autism. So, there was different chemistry that's inside of some of these vaccines, some of them that they use for preservatives and such like that, that were actually causing some serious health effects. And, boy, if you was to talk about it back in the day, everybody's all like, oh, well, you're just a nutcase, tinfoil hat-wearing conspiracy guy. When in reality, what they were showing was the truth. And it's not to say that, all vaccines are bad. But, come on, folks, if you don't know what you're putting in your kid's body or yourselves for that matter, I kind of found it ironic that everybody who was going out and getting all the doggone flu shots ended up getting the flu, Supposed to get inoculated from getting the flu, and doggone it, they didn't end up getting sicker. And I'm like, hey, man, there ain't no way in heck you're going to give me that stuff. Matter of fact, when I was down at the VA office, they offered me a flu shot, and I said, no. No, thank you.
No, sir, I didn't like it.
Anyway, go over and check out Grindall61 on his YouTube channel. He's out there trying to do what, everybody should be out there trying to do, holding the government's feet to the fire, He's not talking about going out protesting and beating everybody up and looting and pillaging and all that kind of stuff. He's talking about, getting involved in your community and go to these school functions and read some of the books that they're supposed to be, making where the kids will be watching or reading these doggone books. I mean, if you want to see sheer indoctrination, go back and watch his channel and go look at some of the doggone books that these, I don't know what you'd call them, man, so-called green people, save the planet people have been putting out there. A lot of craziness, a lot of sheer propaganda and just strictly agenda-based knowledge that they want to put in your kid's head from kindergarten all the way up. It's disgusting, man. Are you still there, Thomas?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, you just got to read some of these doggone these textbooks that they're trying to get through to the schools. And, man, if you really want to get sick, go out there and find you some books from the 1960s. Science, math, social studies, history, and all that kind of stuff, and match them up to the modern day deal. And you want to talk about a liberal agenda or whatever, somebody got to change history because it might be offensive to somebody else and so on and so forth. But the scary part is when they start teaching things and quoting them as science that aren't even real. Now you're going to have some people way down the line that ain't even going to have a clue of what real science is all about. We did actual experiments in class whenever I was a kid. We learned about making batteries and what chemicals to mix and which ones not to mix. We actually had chemistry classes. Did you ever have any of that when you was in school, Thomas?
Oh yeah, I was actually kind of shocked the first time I noticed that they weren't even teaching how to distill wood and how to use a fractional crystallization to separate and identify, you know, different soluble substances and whatnot. So,
well, if you're there to teach the kids on how on some survival skills for the future, you're not doing them any justice by, number one, propagandizing them into believing all kinds of stuff. Go all the way back in to that 1951 video. Duck and cover. I said cover your neck up and try to cover any exposed skin because you could get a severe sunburn, is what they said. Severe radiation burn, and not to mention potential blindness if you happen to be looking at it when it happens. It's that initial right. flash. But when you look at the kids and listen to what they're saying on the deal, the kids actually believed that that was actually going to save them, you know?
Right.
Which I guess on one sense, it's better to not know if you're going to be blasted into oblivion.
Calm as Hindu cows.
Yeah. But on the other hand, it's not really going to save anybody's life, you know, ducking down and putting your head underneath the desk and all that kind of stuff. I could see it maybe for an earthquake, getting underneath the desk if the desk is built sturdy like they were back in the day.
You're really getting into this because you're repeating yourself now.
Oh, well, back in the day whenever they made furniture that was real. You get underneath these modern day and the ceiling falls on you, I guess you're just, you're toast, dude.
Yeah.
That, what are the particle board? Compressed board.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, like I said, you gotta learn some stuff and pay attention to what they were teaching back in the day and actually look at what they're teaching nowadays, and you're going to find there's a really big difference. A lot of the history's changed. And, you know, whoever's in control of the school books out there, man.
Not the first time. I mean, look at how they treated, events concerning the Native Americans. They weren't willing to tell anybody the truth about that because that's the last thing they wanted is for people to realize just how homicidal and genocidal the people who were basically taking that land from them were, you know?
And, you know, every Thanksgiving it was like, you know, the natives, the Indians were everybody's friends and they were all having dinner together and all that kind of stuff. And then, it looked like it was pretty cool. We met some new friends and we moved in with them. And now, in reality...
Until they had more power than them. The only reason that there might have been an event like that would have been because those people... You know what they say, a friend in need is a friend indeed.
Yeah.
Not in need anymore? Ah, screw you. Who needs you, you know? You're in my way. Out of the way. I need some elbow room. You know?
Yeah, I'd say our system's pretty well out of whack, man. But I want kids to be able to learn real science, real hands-on stuff. That way, you know, that's how things get invented and fixed, you know, to basically stimulate the creative minds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why I put all these videos out there, what doesn't appear to be that big of a deal, but these little anomalies for all these different devices and how magnetic fields work and high voltage and plasma and all that kind of stuff. Each one of those could trigger something in somebody's mind that they'd say, wow, if you can do that with that, then you can do that with this better. You see what I mean? And so it gets everybody's minds thinking. And that's what we need, is people out there actually thinking. And I also posted this video down there of an EMP-hardened solar panel kit. And I actually posted the link to the site where they're selling them. Not because I'm trying to advertise for them, but because, you know, in a grid-down situation, you got what you got. You got the batteries you got the solar panel you got the electricity that you got. And so it is a matter of preparation, you know. You get ready before something happens and you got what you need when it does happen, kind of thing. But if these systems right here are easy enough for the average Joe to be able to, you know, just get them at least, at the very least, some supplemental power so that if the power goes off, then they still have at least lighting and maybe a little bit of cooling and possibly some heat going on. It's a good start to getting energy independent. That's what everybody needs in their house, is to be energy independent. You see what I mean? Are you still there?
Yeah.
Basically, the reason why I keep talking about solar is because it's real simple. You know, you buy a solar panel, a charge controller so you don't overcharge your battery, and if you're actually using it continuously, you're not going to need a solar charger to regulate the voltage of the battery, as long as it's continuously under load. You know, like you had a light bulb. If you had a light bulb on all the time and it just never had the opportunity to overcharge because it's continuously drawing on it, then you can get by quite a long time without a solar regulator, a charge controller. And so not everything's necessary to be able to use that. But the next video that I put down there in line was one that Laser Saber's been working on, where he's using some supercapacitors to have a solar panel set up that, and actually it's pretty flexible. You need to look at that link. The way these panels are made, they're really flexible. And you can either fold it out for the full 400 watts, or you can actually fold it up for, you know, space-wise, or you can, you know, use less wattage or whatever. But what's impressive about this is he's actually able to run tools real-time off of it. You know, as opposed to like a regular solar panel, you know, you're not going to get that much direct power out of it. You use that power from the solar panel to charge up a battery and then run your load off of the battery, and or how many other battery banks you got. But this one here is pretty impressive because the way he's got it set up to them supercapacitors, it's a direct power right out of the gate. It's essentially the same thing, charging a battery, but just uses supercapacitors and gives you real time power out of it. Yeah, it's pretty brilliant. Anyway, if you don't put all your eggs in one basket, and you try to save yourself, try to save yourself a little bit of money by taking and building new little systems. You know, put a little small solar panel outside and use it to run some LED lighting instead of turning on the regular light switch. Every time you gotta have light in your room, just use the free version, the solar panel. And so, for every one that you can build onto to do that, that's a less money you're gonna have to pay on your electrical bill every month. And then you could take those savings and put them off the side and keep reinvesting until eventually you can take your whole system off the grid if you wanted, or just do like the one with the solar panels that I just mentioned. Doggone it. Solar Arc Portable Solar Generator is the name of that particular model that he's talking about. It has a system that actually changes. It switches itself from grid power to solar power. So it uses solar power during the daytime, and then whenever the batteries start getting low or whatever, then it'll kick over to the grid power. And so at least half the time you're only using the power grid for electricity. The rest of the time you're using solar. And so that, once again, will cause some savings that you could actually reinvest and, you know, use that money to buy some more solar panels or whatever. And then don't just put all your eggs in solar. Throw you up some wind turbines. You know, get Muddy to show you how to make one of his actual flux wind generators. Or there's other companies out there, if you're not, you know, very good at manufacturing or making stuff, you can just go out and buy you some cheap wind turbines, wind generators. And once again, more of these that you have around, supplementing your deal before the power grid went down or whatever, you'd already be prepared. You'd at least have some lights and stuff. To run the average home, especially my home, where I'm all on electric, and I've got freezers and refrigerators and, you know, air conditioners, electric heaters, and all that kind of stuff to run, I'm going to need some serious power to maintain the same lifestyle that I lead now. So right now I'm still on the power grid and not saving very much money at all. But when I get a few things accomplished and I can prove that things will work and I know that they're going to be reliable, I'll switch over to completely off the power grid because I know it can be done. It's just that the way that things have been designed to this point is so inefficient, we waste more energy than we use. What do you think, Thomas?
Sounds like a plan.
Well, if you want to see how much energy that you're actually wasting, go out there and buy you one of them little AC, wireless AC testers, or some magnet paper and run around and check out some of your equipment when it's running. You'll actually see that that field is expanded way past where it needs to be. You know, and they're always talking about, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, where people get Wi-Fi bothers them, or all the different EMP fields around.
Right.
Yeah. So, essentially, we're floating in a sea of all kinds of crazy frequencies, which some people react differently to. So, health-wise, if you want to get your act together and start building electricity, things that run off electricity that run so efficient and cleanly that they're not actually no waste energy or stray frequencies going out all over the place, you know, then it can be done. But you gotta look and see what nature's been doing all along and duplicate it. You know, it's like that magnetic field. There's a video out there somebody posted last week that you can actually see a 3D version of a magnetic field where they got the transformer inside a liquid that has like ferrofluid in there. And so when you turn the power on, you can actually see the magnetic flux lines. You can see exactly how far they're extending per, you know, whatever voltage you're running. So then you turn around and redesign your cores, your transformers, to use every bit of that as opposed to, you know, wasting it. That's why I was mentioning the bismuth. What do you think?
Again, you know, it sounds like an idea, so just have to give it a shot, you know?
Yeah. I think I threw you under the bus again, didn't I?
Yes, you did. Help! I'm being repressed.
Hey, with friends like me, who needs enemies? Anyway, doggone it. He said something about it. Stephen Gibbons posted a comment in there, said it's not just an inverter. No, that system that I was talking about is actually a grid tie, and it changes over automatically.
Right.
This, he also posted some links in there of the damage done in Nagasaki 1945 after the bomb, and Nagasaki 2011 following the earthquake tsunami. So, wow. The two pictures that he posted in there, or the link to the two pictures that he posted in there, the tsunami and the bomb pretty much did close to the same amount of damage.
Right.
What a mess.
You heard what I said about that that arch.
Oh yeah, it stayed up. It was well built. Well,
yeah. Like, what's that arch made out of? I want my whole house made out of that.
Well, there's another thing there too, man. We always talked about it's fully possible to build essentially a weatherproof house, man. And you know, if you live in earthquake zone, there's ways to build your house to where, you know, if the ground starts to shake, your house don't fall apart. And and if you're living in cyclone alley or tornado alley or whatever, you build your house to be more, you know, adaptable to the wind. So, such a, like a dome, you know. Wind would go around the dome. but it's going to grab the flat side house and throw it over in the neighbor's yard and such. So there are ways to actually build them, flood-proof, earthquake-proof.
Now we do need Muddy in here so we can talk about geodesic domes.
Yeah. Where is Muddy anyway?
Any angle to that is going to help deflect a vast amount of the energy from that wind. If it's catching it though with a flat face like a sail, it's going to obviously have a really terrible effect on it.
Yeah, when I put my house in, I actually put it at an angle so that any north or south wind would deflect off of the corner of it, and hopefully do less damage if it ever got that bad or something like that. So a little bit of pre-planning if you're actually going to build a house from start to finish. Somebody was young enough and had the foresight to actually start off building their house, and if they built their house to be super energy efficient, such as the best insulation and the best construction, using everything we know about domes and arches and all the different really strong geometrical shapes and such, and then as far as electricity, put a dual system in there. One would be like a DC 12 volt system, and the other one would be an AC system and all that kind of stuff. It would pay for itself as far as I'm concerned, because you'd actually have a house that would be ready for just such an emergency, maybe an earthquake or a flood or whatever. Those people that live down by the rivers, they built their houses on floats. So they got these huge poles next to their house, and if the flood comes in, the house just floats up, the garage floats up, and worst case scenario, they got to take a boat to shore in the morning to go to work. Leave the car behind. But it's if you're going to live in that kind of area, then you need to probably be prepared for that kind of area. Now, the area that I wouldn't live in is anywhere near a doggone volcano. So if a volcano pops up in my yard this today, then tomorrow I'll be moving out. Yeah, I want a part of that. But the folks live at bases of volcanoes that have been dormant for, they say, thousands of years or whatever. And, it's Murphy's Law. I don't like that. The thought that at any given time that thing could just decide to wake up again. If you live in, like California, they're prone to earthquakes all the time. You'd think that way back when the first earthquake did the most damage, that all the houses from that point on would have been made out of something like rubber or something. Way, if the earth shook, then the ground just kind of wobbled, or the house just kind of wobbled a bit and then, leveled itself back out, something. they've got bunkers of basically bomb shelters that are set on rollers for the impact of the bomb blowing off, that the deals like setting on like shock absorbers and rollers, so that it just kind of move back and forth or wobble up and down a bit, but it's not going to transfer all that destructive energy into the actual building itself, and so they're able to withstand a heck of a lot of force. Why couldn't you do that with all the other buildings? I'd say biggest part of it is all financial. Everything that's made of quality is going to cost a little bit more, so people will always try to save money by making it cheap.
Right. Well, that's because they don't have to use it.
Yeah.
And they don't plan on being around whenever things go wrong.
Well, if you want to build you a cheap, inefficient, shade, you can build you a paper umbrella. But the first time the wind picks up or the rain kicks in, the paper umbrella's trash. So, there you go, man.
And you won't get any workout carrying that thing around.
Yeah.
Make that thing out of granite.
A granite umbrella? Man,
get yourself a workout there, man.
Stinks if your arm gives out. You're gonna have a goose egg on your head.
That's some Wile E. Coyote technology.
Yeah. You know, you got to say one thing about Wile E. Coyote. He had really good mail service. Ain't no joking. That Acme factory, I'll tell you what, they were on their game. I'll tell you what, that's the best company to do business with. If you want to do business, you find one of the Acme companies that he bought stuff from. Because as soon as he ordered it, it was shipped out. And, man, you talk about service. Of course, none of his plans seemed to pan out, but hey. And there's another thing, too. Where did he get all the doggone money for all that stuff? Because as far as I can see, he never went to work. He's too busy planning on how to you know, get the Roadrunner.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Dexter's Laboratory. You ever watch that show?
No.
Dexter's Laboratory is a cartoon that's on, I think, Nickelodeon or something like that. When my kids used to watch it, and I'd sit around watching with them, and I got amused by it because Dexter was like a little mad science guy that was inventing all kinds of stuff. And one day it just dawned on me, this kid, he's got like all kinds of technology going on, and, you know, I'm thinking, man, how's this kid afford all this? Well, turned out he was getting it all on credit all along, and there was one episode where his little sister won the lottery, and she saved his neck by bailing him out with the money that she won from the lottery, paid his bill before mom and dad found out.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So anyway, that's pretty much how things work out there. It's expensive to get what you need, and you know, I'm trying to find alternative views or alternatives to whatever. I got my friend working on that direct drive washing machine motor circuit, because when these things come out, instead of pulling the doggone entire wiring system and leaving everything intact where all the switches and everything was, I didn't do that, and so now I'm trying to track down which one of these is actually the switch that turns on that motor for that driver circuit. And it's obnoxious. Like these modern day microwaves, you actually have to put a square wave in about 5 volts in order to get the circuit to even turn on. And so to use that circuit as it stands is pretty much basically worthless, you know, if you want to use it for something alternative. And so you got to figure out how to build you another little circuit to use to turn that doggone thing on. I wish they hadn't have made it like that, but they did for some reason or another. But if you want to use that, it's they call it inverter technology in the newer microwave ovens. They don't have a microwave oven transformer like the old ones. They just got a flyback transformer inside there. Man, we gotta get Muddy in here. At least he talks a lot. Where you at, Muddy?
Keep poking at him. I told him, I messaged him, I said, I asked him, are your ears burning? Because, you know, we mentioned him earlier about the geodesic domes.
Yeah, tell him we're talking smack about him. That'll get him in here.
I would have thought that he would have said something already. He's probably knocked out or having to run and do something.
Probably. He's been pretty busy.
But yeah.
Anyway, scrolling back through those videos right there, these are just links that I hope will benefit you as far as the solar panels and stuff like that. You know, my Mad Science Show and my YouTube is basically the search for free energy. And if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. But when it gets down to an actually holy grail device, something that you can plug in that's going to run your entire house, these kind of things take money to do. And since I'm not willing to accept donations from somebody, I'll jump on a crew and I'll help with my ideas. I'll help them to troubleshoot it and actually build devices. But it's not something that one person can do by themselves unless they have access to a machine shop. And it's not something that your average Joe can do by themselves unless they have a lot of money and knowledge and access to a machine shop. I keep trying to explain to people, this is something that's going to take everybody working together in order to be able to accomplish, because we got all the answers. That's not even an issue. We can put machines together that not just solar, but wind and thermal and hydroelectrics and everything we know about science, all the chemistry and everything to build, literally build a self-contained unit that will run your house. My house is an energy hog. You know, I just paid my electric bill yesterday. It was slightly under $300. $300 to some people a month is cheap. You know, like I seen a friend from Australia, he had an astronomical bill. It's like it's $1,200 and something for 1 month. Mm. I'm like, my God, if I got a $1,200 light bill, you'd be burying me tomorrow. I'd have a stroke. But, you know, right now we're at the stage where it's essentially, you know, try to supplement your income or supplement your electric bill and work on all these other ideas at the same time. That video you mentioned about Robert Murray Smith about he's working on some really good supercapacitor technology, and he was making some really good size plates, you know, for storage and stuff. That technology combined with all this other stuff that we're talking about, you know, the key is storage. If you can store a lot of energy, you'll have all the electricity you need. And some of the modern day batteries just can't hold up to charge and discharge as much. That's why they have deep cycle batteries out there that will allow you to bring that battery down to 20% of its full capacity without destroying the battery. You know, your average car battery, while it still will give you power, won't be as efficient as it could be. See what I mean?
Right.
And there's better ways to build better batteries. You know, the thicker the plates, the heavier duty of the battery is going to be, and so on. But all of these are there. All of these answers are there. And you know, hydrogen technology, all of it's been shown out there time and time again. You take all this stuff in conjunction with one another. You take everything that you know from the known laws of physics. You invoke the laws of physics that you want. You avoid the ones that you don't want invoked. And even the ones that you don't want at certain points will be beneficial. You know? Like the induction motors that lid motor and all them's been doing out of aluminum tubing and tape, where you're spinning magnets past and it's actually spinning a rotor that has aluminum on it.
Mm.
You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, one of them by themselves, not going to cut it. All of them in conjunction with another and, you know, made decent and with precision. You know, the best bearings that you can get and the best, you know, conductors that you can get, and pre-planning ahead of time for failures, something that would be easy to replace as opposed to, you know, like the modern day cars. I swear they must have built these cars in layers. You want to get to one sensor, you got to take off half the motor. You know, I've seen cars where if you want to change the spark plugs on it, you got to jack up the back end of them. You got to undo the motor mount and jack up the back of the motor so that you can reach in there and get a hold of the spark plug.
Hmm.
That's crazy, man. Pontiac, 1999 Pontiac. I can't remember what model it is. GT something, I think. But Pontiac Grand Prix. I had to actually undo the motor mount, jack the back of the motor up just to do a tune-up on it to change the spark plugs. That's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, that's, you know, you build these cars in layers and build them so high-tech, look like a giant octopus up underneath there with all the vacuum lines and wiring and stuff, and then the average Joe out driving this cool-looking car, when it breaks down, ain't even got a clue where to start. You know?
Yeah.
So if you're going to build an energy device, it needs to be something that the average Joe can just, you know, something goes wrong, you change a part, you know, something off the shelf. That's what takes so long, is to actually find things that are already in existence and put them together to make it be able to run something that's so doggone inefficient that it's just insane. You know, we got a lot of good appliances. I mean, they do what they're supposed to do, but they drain a whole lot of energy to do it. But you don't have to have 120 to 220 volts to actually run a refrigerator. There's ways to do it at 12 volts, 24 volts. You know, it's just going to be, you know, how do I explain this? Industrial strength as opposed to just being able to get by kind of strength.
Right.
Yeah, you know, like them igloo coolers out there that have the Peltier elements in there. They're going to be good for something, but they actually do drain quite a bit of energy, you know. Could they be done better? I think so. I think they could be done a heck of a lot better. Heating, cooling, and everything, using everything that nature's already provided without all the waste and all the pollution involved in it. I mean, it's all doable. We got the science.
There's right.
Tons of researchers out there doing all kinds of the research on there. And if they could come together and not put all their eggs in one basket and, you know, put all the pieces of the puzzle together, we could actually build the holy grail of electricity, you know, generating systems. I saw a video just yesterday where they're talking about fusion technology. When you talk about nuclear technology, everybody starts to freak out, but not all nuclear technology is bad. You know, you got nuclear fission and you got nuclear fusion. You know, one of them you're going to use to blow up an atomic bomb, which is the fission portion of it, and the fusion portion of it, where you're going to be able to generate a massive amount of heat and be able to use that heat energy just the same way that you would be for the nuclear power plants out there that are using radioactive rods to boil the water. It's just a different method without all the radioactivity involved in it.
Right.
Yeah. The plasma technology that I'm talking about is basically close to the fusion portion of it, because you're actually energizing a noble gas in the vacuum to the plasma state, and at the heart of that plasma is a lot of heat. And the more energy you put to it, the more heat you're going to get. And you can see that whenever you energize this at different high voltages, where at lower high voltages you got a nice pretty purple plasma, and the higher you crank that thing up to like 20,000 volts, now you're getting a white glow inside there. You see the difference? Heat is light is heat.
No, no, I don't see anything because I'm not looking at what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, we're talking on radio, man.
But I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Can you visualize it in the cranium, man? Anyway, it doesn't take much to produce high voltage. You know, there's plenty of energy around there, but to get a lot of current flow for the watts and the amps necessary to run the things that we run now. And amperage and wattage are basically damaging, man. Things get hot when you run a lot of amps through them.
Right.
You know? And so, where is that sweet point before it gets hot? How far can you actually push that wire before it gets hot to where it stays at a reasonable temperature and you still get the work done that you need? That's where the mathematicians need to be. To sit in there and calculate up the most efficient place to put that doggone transformer as far as how much voltage input you're putting in and how big of a load you're draining off of it. See, that kind of knowledge right there would save, would be the difference of having to replace your transformer when you burn it up. Like, I bought some circuits here a while back, and I smoked probably about three or four of them because I put too many amps to it. The doggone thing said that they were rated for 2 amps. I was using a 1 amp power supply and burn it up right out of the gate, man. So that's because I didn't get the math right or something.
Too much voltage with that amperage?
Yeah, too much voltage.
That's what it sounds like.
But so there's where the mathematician comes in to play. Now, we can modify existing generators to actually run on hydrogen or wood gas, so there's a plus in a post-apocalyptic scenario. You know, but why couldn't we be doing that like right now? You know?
People are too used to just waiting to the last minute.
Well, that's a problem. And, you know, I've had a lot of people cuss me out up and down the store and tell me how stupid I am for pointing things out, but hey, when it all said and done, all I see that they've accomplished is cussing somebody out. I didn't see any videos on their YouTubes or anything.
Well,
I didn't.
They're making energy, man. It's all that hot air.
Yeah. Well, and they're quoting the school book. I don't quote the school book unless I, you know, it's something that's basic science. It's provable there. But when you're starting to get into the laws of physics and quantum physics and all that kind of stuff, where when everything is just a theory still, because nobody's ever really proven anything, nobody's ever really seen the electron. Has anybody got a good photo of the electron? Google it. See if you can find a good photo of the electron. That way you can tell me whether or not, yeah, we actually got it. We got it pinned down. They got a picture of it. This is what an electron looks like. No, because it's like a telescope. You can only see so far out in space, and a microscope where you can only see so far into inner space, because you just can't get it fine-tuned enough to actually see that tiny, you know? Anything I'm saying making sense to you, man?
I'm not here. I've now gone to another plane.
Well, if you're going to go looking into inner space with an electron microscope, you'll see down to the size of the atom, because actually IBM actually spelt out IBM and actually even drew a little stick figure moving atoms around. It was pretty cool. But on that atom, you couldn't get any further to actually see the electron spinning around the atom and all that kind of stuff. So, it's still all theory, man.
Well, they can't really tell where the atom, the electron's at either.
Yeah.
In fact, they can't even really tell where an atom is at. So, they're probably, whenever they were doing that with the whole IBM thing, they were probably just basically using the process I was talking about using for some time, which is you can control photons much more efficiently, so, and probably the electron flow that they're using, because they were using an electron scanning microscope to do that, so they were probably just targeting an area they wanted it to go to get it to attract to that area.
Yeah.
That way it didn't matter where it was at when it started out, what mattered was where it ended up.
So, if you want to see that, Google up or go on YouTube and check out IBM... you know, Adam. There's a video called Adam. They called the little stick figure Adam. And you'll see, you'll find a video where they actually showed where they made a little stick figure cartoon. I ain't too many frames of the deal, but it's pretty neat that they used atoms to do it. But either way, that's as far as it's gone down. And as far as, you know, all these different things about space and galaxies and all that kind of stuff, where it's, I'm a Star Trek geek and I love Star Trek and Star Wars and all that kind of stuff, and I'd love to be able to go travel through space and do all this stuff like they do, but in reality, when you're looking at a light that's supposedly millions of billions of years away, and the only way that you can to tell what's actually on that light is by the different colors of light spectrum, or, you know, maybe that the light's blinking, so that means there's something that orbiting it. So they speculate and theorize on what is actually going on out there, when in reality nobody's ever been there. So you might see a blinking light out there, and it's a sun, and then you get there and yeah, there's a planet going around it, but the planet ain't got nothing to do with the chemistry that they made with their spectrum, light spectrum, because of whatever reason. You see what I'm saying here?
Mm-hmm.
So it's all just theory. So whenever these folks are sitting there cursing you out and telling you how stupid you are, they're quoting something that it isn't even plausible or a real fact. You know, it's a good idea. Maybe light spectrums could tell you a lot about chemistry and gases and such like that. You know, but over that period of distance, and you're going to claim that. Because the science guy said that's that, then you're going to buy it or whatever. You know, that's crazy. So if I'm thinking outside the box and I'm saying maybe there's a potential that, you know, maybe the electrons flow on the outer skin, or maybe they flow through the wire, or however it goes, I always use electrons because it's what the school book used to say. All right, and until that theory is completely debunked or whatever, but it's easy to understand how when a magnetic field comes in contact with another magnetic field, they couple with one another and become one stronger magnetic field. Kind of like pouring a drop of water, two different drops of water into the same bowl. They're going to connect. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then if you vibrate the one, you'll actually see the waves going through there. So the best explanation I can give of electrons is what I actually observe in nature on how waves actually work. You know, the best explanation of electricity is water. You know, you put your thumb over the garden hose and you get pressure. And the other way, you get the current flow that you want. And so all these ideas that I'm talking about as far as plasma and heating and stuff like that, if you don't have a resistive load such as a big old element that you're trying to keep red hot so that you can blow air across it, which it in reality is really inefficient, because now you're using two power sources to get one accomplishment. Whereas if you had a plasma heating system, you could actually take that heat directly off from, you know, once you heat the plasma up, whatever's inside the center of that plasma will transfer that heat. You know, copper's a good transfer of heat, but you obviously couldn't run water through there at too much temperature, because then you'd build up copper oxides, and if anybody drank it, they would croak. That's why the doggone people that's out there making steels and stuff like that, they don't want their alcohol running blue. You see what I mean?
That's actually something I didn't know.
Yeah.
So it means there's copper oxides in the alcohol, huh?
Yeah, if you get the steel too hot, the alcohol will actually come out blue. And if it does, then it's trash, because you can't drink it. Because it basically heats up the copper. And you know, like whenever you normally see copper that kind of gets kind of greenish color and mm-hmm. kind of corroded.
Verdigris.
Yeah. Well, that will, when you heat it up too hot, will actually transfer to the liquid, and you'll get a blue color out the other side, and you can't drink it. It'll kill you.
No way to extract it, huh?
Nope. I'm sure probably scientifically there's probably a way, but the moonshiners ain't going to try it unless they get all high tech. They're just too busy trying to make alcohol and make a few bucks, I guess. Get liquored up, man.
Get liquored up.
Yeah. So, you know, there are things that would have to be factored in. You know, I think if you could actually afford it and build a coil of stainless steel. So far, stainless seems to be the cleanest of all the metals that we can actually run things through at high temperatures without, you know, any bad effects that we know of yet. not that you're going to be drinking the water out of it anyway. If you're not going to be drinking the water, then the copper oxide ain't going to matter unless it has some sort of destructive on down the line as far as what it would do to other metals, like corrosion-wise and stuff. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, I found out that apparently graphite can't be used for lubrication on aluminum because it corrodes the aluminum.
Well,
kind of interesting.
That is interesting because I wonder if there's actually an energy release between the two when that's actually occurring.
That's what I was thinking.
You know,
something that's causing it to deoxidize, or it's passing the energy through the oxide layer indirectly into the aluminum, causing the oxide layer to build up or something, digging down into the aluminum.
Well, it'd be worth looking into. I have noticed that there were some guys making graphene and aluminum batteries. I actually liked the video. You might be able to find if you scroll down my Facebook. There's a video that I liked.
I've seen it. They use aluminum foil and graphene that they've basically made.
Yeah, and that seemed to be getting pretty good results, and it was actually charging itself up overnight because of the chemistry in between there. But see, these little things like that could be so easily overlooked. You know, all these little anomalies that I keep talking about from all these different alternative energy devices, those are proven to work. You know, maybe it's not going to give you the free energy device or the perpetual motion device because of conservation of energy or whatever and all the different effects. But that one effect is still useful. You know, Lenz's law, still useful. You're actually going to create a second magnetic field. They use it in electric braking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Without Lenz's law, you don't have electric braking. You see what I mean?
Yep.
And so what I'm talking about is, you know, taking all of these different things and putting them together to actually build something worthwhile that could, at the very least, supplement your electric bills and actually get out there for the average Joe to be able to just go to the store and buy things right off the store shelf, you know, or jump on eBay and buy parts and put it together. Or,
right, they're not going to be buying high-powered lasers, steel tubes, and aluminum tubes to remagnetize patterns onto magnets using CNC equipment, are they?
No, and industry already has the tools. Industry already has the capability to do exactly what we've been talking about. But, you know, it's obvious reasons why they're not going to do it. And then, you know, it's not because, you know, the technology doesn't exist or it's implausible. And it's not even because it costs too doggone much money, because they'll spend millions of dollars to research things and build it, you know, and tool and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not that. It's that... You, if you're going to tell everybody about free electricity and build a device that will last 20 to 100 years that you don't have to pay the electric bill anymore, well, that's all well and good if you could actually get it done, but the whole key is that the power companies, they got friends with the other companies, the oil companies and so on and so forth, and they're like, hey, you know,
friends, it's all one conglomerate, isn't it?
Well, pretty much.
And pretty much the same people own the whole kit and caboodle.
But they're like, if you let this technology out there on the deal, we're going to end up going broke, you know, because they're not going to be buying our oil or our electricity anymore. You know, and so you get all these phony battles out there about, you know, destroying the coal industry and destroying the fossil fuel oil industry and so on and so forth. But here we are still today. We're still using it, you know. If you was really serious about it and, you know, global warming / climate change, that's ironic that they changed the name to suit whatever it is that's going on at the time, because it's kind of hard to explain to everybody that the planet's heating up whenever you're freezing, you got snot sickles hanging off your face and you're standing up to your neck in 30 feet of snow. Oh, that's
right.
Global warming, man. Really? Serious? I mean, I was born at night, but it wasn't last night.
I was born in the morning, but not this morning.
Yeah. It's frustrating, man. But the technology is there. In order to get it into the hands of the average Joe, we're going to need the average Joe to help out. You know, I'm not talking about donation-wise. I don't want your money. You know, I'm talking about your brain. That's what. If I show you an idea, and then you look at that idea, and you see its downfalls, and you also see something, wait a second, if I put this with your idea, I can get this. That's what I'm talking about. Because
Confucius said, the longest journey started with a single step. That's exactly what you just said.
Yeah. So all of us working together, taking everything, all the research that we've done all these years, we can actually get together and build devices that would work, you know? At the very least, once again, supplement that doggone electric bill. If you're paying 50% less than you was before, then that means you got 50% that you can invest in there. And then, if you wanted to buy some copper wire or something like that and throw it towards the cause or whatever, see, that's a different story. But I don't want this to turn into like a Keshi episode where he's out there, got his hand out to everybody and his brother and got orders all over the planet. You know, with people who's either going to get what they paid for or get ripped off with some piece of junk that comes in the mail. That's not what it's all about. The whole concept was to show everybody that energy is free. And stick it to the power company. That's it, you know?
Yeah, not to other people.
Yeah.
Not to individuals.
If the power company has to reform their ways because less people are going to buy their energy because they're being jerks about it, you know, then...
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen. You just said it all right there. Look. Wait a minute. Hold up. Don't stick it to the power company. Teach the power company. Teach them that the energy is free. People are starting to learn that it is free. So therefore, the people need to get together, do what you're talking about, what Thomas is talking about, and teach them.
Well, Raymond, that sounds all good in theory.
But they don't need to stick it to us. We don't need to stick it to them. They need to learn that we are running out of money. So the people need to do it on their own until the power company learns.
I agree with your concept, but the problem is the power company has that little button that they can push and shut your power off at any given time. So they, right now, they hold all the cards and you don't. And so
exactly. And that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Educate the people first so they can make their own electricity, cut their own bills, and when the power company learns that, we screwed up.
Yeah.
We're draining them dry and they're getting tired of it. Learn how to create your own energy, not create, but collect the free energy that's already out there.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And you know, just showing people how to save a few pennies on there, you know, when the power company's wallet starts getting a little bit thinner and people are starting to actually pay attention, they're always talking about going green. I hate it. Every time it comes on the doggone TV or news or whatever, they're always talking about reducing your carbon footprint. But by God, the moment you try to, in certain places, you put solar panels up, and now they want to tax you to get sunlight. They want to tax you for collecting rainwater. They want to tax you for the wind. You got people out there continuously hollering about, well, all these are an eyesore. Well, first off, you can't have your cake and eat it too if you're going to be like that. You need to understand that if you want me to be off the power grid and reduce my carbon footprint, I'm not willing to give up my electricity because I got kids that need heat and cool and food. You see what I mean?
Yes,
it's a hypocrisy of epic proportions when you talk about save the planet and you're standing out there holding a doggone wooden stick with a paper sign hollering about save the trees, then you're an idiot. I mean, Unless you did like what I think Thomas mentioned about you went over and picked up a dead tree branch and made your sign out of that. You know, that could be respectful because you're recycling.
Okay. I love it.
Yeah. You know, I call it mad science for a reason, because I'm sitting here, I don't see the common sense that should be. There's a lot of brilliant individuals out there. There's a lot of really creative people that have manufacturing skills that are, you know, unmatchable. And I can't manufacture by myself. Every time I turn around, either my measurements are off, or as far as trying to construct something that is precision, doesn't wobble when you're trying to use it. But even when I show it, even in the junk mode, even if it's made out of trash and it's still wobbling and inefficient, it still shows that if this thing was precision, you'd get some really amazing results out of it. You see what I mean?
Yes, I do.
In my Free Thinkers video, I put up several windmills out there, and I put them in the worst possible place. I put them right in front of like four evergreen trees where, you know, they're not going to catch near the wind they could if they was out in the open. I did that deliberately. And this thing out here, between the wind, between the sun, between the galvanic action in the dirt, from the static electricity being collected, the negative ion generators involved in the deal, and the difference of AC capacitors and DC capacitors involved in there, spark gap technology, Tesla technology, all wrapped up into one big old pile of junk. Alright, there is continuous energy coming into that system all the time. Now, is it enough to run your house? No, but it is enough to prove a point that even with trash, stuff that would have went to the dump, I am still on a continuous basis collecting and storing and using energy on demand, real time. And those lights have been on since that very first video came up, and that's been over 6 months.
I don't know if what I'm about to say has anything to do with what you're talking about, but I think it does. Think about your city trash dump. You pay the city to collect your trash. They pay the landfill to take it. The city's making money because they're charging you more than the dump or the landfill is taking their trash. So you're paying for somebody to haul off your trash. That's the city. The city is paying somebody to collect it, which the person that takes it didn't buy the land. The city gave it to them, okay? And they don't have to pay taxes on it because they're doing the city a favor. But the city pays them to take your trash. Or you can, as an individual, take your trash to the dump, but you got to pay them to take it.
Yep.
They put it in the landfill. The landfill puts it in a hole and puts dirt on top of it. And then they collect more and they put dirt on top of that. And they collect more and they put dirt on top of that. And I'm making a short story long. Okay?
Yeah, eventually the hole is filled.
Shorten this.
Well, say the hole is filled and they sell the property off.
Yeah.
No, they don't.
They don't?
No, because all this trash is buried under dirt, and it's trash is organic, and when it's buried under dirt or put into water, it decomposes, and in the process of decomposing, all organic trash, when it decomposes, makes gas, natural gas, methane gas. And where does this gas go? Oh, it goes into the atmosphere and it destroys the ozone. No, it doesn't. It's collected, burnt, makes heat, boils water, makes steam, makes it the electricity, and these same people that charge you or the city to bury your trash are now charging you for the electricity they're making from your trash. Come on.
Well, let me ask Thomas something.
Okay.
You got different types of batteries out there. You got alkaline batteries, nickel cadmium, and lithium batteries. Normally, when they go dead, even like the rechargeable ones, and you can't recharge them anymore, and they end up in the dump. What could you do with those batteries? As like what I'm trying to say is like recycling wise, could you do with those batteries? Could you take like an alkaline battery, because just because it ain't holding the charge doesn't mean it doesn't have something useful still inside of it. Maybe you could take a bunch of old batteries and you know, maybe separate some of the materials and reuse some of those, that chemistry inside there, to make a homemade battery. You see what I mean?
Yes, I do, and I'm glad you wanted to ask Thomas, because Thomas is the only person I know that could possibly answer that question.
Instead of all these batteries piling up in the dump, and you
say they do that all the time. That's why you're supposed to recycle your batteries, so they can go ahead and break them down and process the materials and go ahead and put them right back out there for sale.
Yeah, that's what they do with car batteries. Unless a car battery is totally toasted out, unless the cells are all busted up and maybe the casing's cracked, but even at that, they still don't trash. They reuse the lead and even the acids inside those old batteries. There's a company called BB Batteries that's down here in Missouri, and they've been doing it for years. They take old batteries, they buy them by the truckloads, and they take and remanufacture them. You know, they'll empty them out, clean out, salvage the ones they can, and recharge them, and then slap a new label on and ship them right out for sale again. That's why when you go to buy a battery at the auto place, they have a core charge on that battery, because you know, they're going to get money out of remanufacturing that battery.
Oh, boy.
So instead of them remanufacturing, jump on YouTube and figure out how to take that lead acid battery and turn it into a pickle battery. Did you know you could use pickling salts as your electrolyte inside there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if you can take and turn what was normally a lead acid battery into an almost environmentally friendly battery using pickling salts and actually get some use out of it, that means that there's no such thing as a bad battery anymore, because all you got to do is flush it out with some baking soda, water, and once it stops bubbling and everything's all clear, then you pour the new mixture in there, charge the doggone thing up, and you got a battery again.
Yep.
So, when I see a battery laying off the side of the road that somebody figured is trash, I collect it up, because I know that in a worst-case scenario, post-apocalyptic scenario, where power grid's down and I need some electricity for something, I can rejuvenate that battery, even if it's been sitting there for 10 years. You know, there's always something useful out there. And we waste so much as a society, it's just ridiculous. You know, I talk about you know, saving the planet, but they're still the same people saving the planet. talking about saving the planet, are still throwing trash out their windows of their cars and throwing trash on the side of the road or whatever. Still stuff going to the dump. Oh, I put it in the trash bag and sent it off with the trash man. You know, it's the trash man's problem now. Well, Raymond just explained how a lot of the trash companies are getting wise, and they're making a lot of money off your trash.
They're not only making money off your trash, they're charging you.
Yeah, to take it away.
And they're making money with it.
They get tax breaks.
They're making money by taking your trash, and then they're turning it into money by selling it back to you.
Oh, they're probably making more money than that, too. They're probably, because of the process that they're using, they're probably charging somebody for carbon credits that they're supposedly accruing.
Yeah.
We're saving all these carbon footprints. We're carbon negative, so you know, let's sell this carbon, these carbon negatives off to somebody that's got a positive, you know.
Not to mention scam. There's a company that's not too far away from where I'm at that whenever they bring the trash in, it doesn't go get buried underneath the ground. It just gets stacked in different piles, and they actually separate this using some specialized machinery that they made. They separate the glass from the plastics, from the aluminum, from the tin, and they're actually recycling it. They're taking it out there and they're getting paid by the ton for whatever it is, that whether it be plastic, glass, or paper, all of it has monetary value. You know, it takes a lot of newspapers to get money as far as recycling wise, but there's still companies out there that buy it, because that little label that you see on the back of your paper cups or whatever that has a little recycling deal on there, people want to buy stuff because it's been made out of recycled stuff because it's environmentally friendly. And they know that. That's a money-making scheme. It's environmentally friendly.
I see it, Thomas. I see it. Shaliz, you cannot see what I think. Thomas is showing me something. And all he's doing is reconfirming what I just said earlier. Thomas is the most brilliant man I've ever known in my daggone life.
What's he showing you?
I mean, it's wild.
What I showed you earlier was some vein graphite taken straight out of the ground in little chunks, and I crushed it down and turned it into a little floating device for, you put it on a magnet, it basically gives enough power and is light enough that it floats on its own.
Cool.
So.
He's taking recycled stuff. It's wild. I wish the listeners could see what I'm seeing.
Now you see why I start up that virtual labs and actually have people's laboratory live broadcast.
Yep, that's the ultimate goal. We need to get, I need help with that process. We've been trying to find somebody who can code everything that we need and get it set up so that anybody can just jump on there, or either broadcast via YouTube, live hangouts or Google Hangouts or whatever. And that way you can see real-time experiments. But on that recycling deal, those fluorescent bulbs, do you realize how many thousands of tons of those fluorescent bulbs probably end up in the dump?
A lot more than end up in the recycling place.
Yeah, and you've seen, everybody's seen that you can sit there and even after they won't work in the standard outlet, you can still light them up with things like Slayer exciter circuits and high voltage. They're still usable.
Yes, they are.
And so if you design a system from the get-go that doesn't need the ballast system and doesn't require as much energy to put in to run those ballasts, you know, best case scenario is you jump over to LED.
Wait a minute. As much energy. That's what you've been trying to get through people's head over and over and over again. You don't need all the energy. You just need the pressure.
Yep.
A pressure is the voltage. The energy is the amperage. Right?
Yep. And, okay. And the higher so the pressure...
Wait a minute. If you have enough pressure and you can push hard enough, then maybe somebody somewhere might listen to you.
The higher the pressure, the faster the speed of the frequency. The higher the frequency.
Exactly.
And so
exactly. People are not listening to you.
All you're doing is shaking up the gas inside there. That's it.
Those people that think they're listening are not listening. They're hearing your words, but they're not thinking about what you're saying. The squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Yep.
We need more people listening to the words and actually hearing what you're saying.
See?
The squeaky wheel gets the grease. If we all stand up and we don't use wooden sticks to hold signs, but we get up and we holler and scream loud enough, then somebody somewhere is going to listen and say, hey, wait a minute, these people don't want windmills.
Well, say you've got...
Wait a minute, we do. Yes, we do. Oh, these people don't want more solar power, so we need to quit making solar power. Wait a minute, we didn't say that. What we said was we need more solar energy. We need more wind power energy. We need more static electricity. We need more of this, more of that. We need.
Yeah, but even at that, Raymond, it's when you got those, and people are hollering about how it's not enough to run power to run your house. That's because they just haven't figured out what I've been trying to say all along. That Slayer exciter circuit where I showed you, I sent one home with you, that you could actually light a light bulb up in midair. All right?
Yes, that's where I'm going.
If that thing was expanded on.
I'm trying to break things down so the average person can understand. The state of Florida produces enough electricity to light the entire United States 24/7. Okay? I mean, you don't need to store a lightning bolt. All you need to do is collect the energy that is naturally generating in the atmosphere.
Yep.
People think, we need to store the energy of a lightning bolt. One lightning bolt could light the entire United States for 3 months. And there is not 1 minute of the day that there is not a lightning bolt clashing in the atmosphere over the state of Florida.
Well, I think somebody's been listening to what you've been saying, because Ken was talking about how it's really difficult to store the energy from a lightning bolt in any of the methods they normally talk about, but you could literally use it to boil water almost instantly and send it up a pipeline, and then let it, when it could, it's going to get the other end and condense and right. Fill a reservoir, and then you could run a turbine off of it.
Yeah.
My point is, don't wait for the capacitor to build to the point it explodes.
Right.
The energy off of it before it explodes.
Well, that's
fair.
I mean, the other thing was that he was mentioning how they can use a laser to ionize the air with very little energy and draw that lightning bolt down ahead of time.
There you go. Now you talk.
So
that's where
the lightning bolt strikes before the capacitor explodes. Collect the energy and use it. Use it. Put your balloons up in the air with a couple of wire. Let the energy go into it and put it in the grid.
All right, that Slayer exciter circuit that I was talking about is one little tip 42C transistor, a diode, and a resistor, and runs off of anywhere from 3 to 9 to 12 volts or up, depending on, the temperature of that transistor would determine how high you can run it. I've actually seen them build something that would run up to 100 volts or more. But that's just one little circuit. If you got, let's say you got 60 light fixtures in your home or your business, and each one of them's running a ballast that runs off 110, 120 volts or whatever, and you add all that up, and then realize that you could design a single wire system going through that entire deal, even a dual wire system, so you could have your light switches just like you normally got it. You would be able to build one circuit that would run all the fluorescent lighting in your house. Just that's all you would need, one circuit. And instead of running it off of all the 60, 110, 120 volt AC, you got one that's running off of maybe 12 or 48 volts DC, or even 110 volts AC, a little transformer. It's inefficient because you didn't really need the transformer to begin with, but let's just say you want to run it on the regular power grid and just plug it into the wall, and that's it. It's a done deal. All you're doing from that point on is sending a signal through your wiring of your house, which isn't going to get hot enough to cause any damage or anything. All it's going to do is energize that gas. When you turn the light switch on, it'll make the connection and allow that to get inside there. It may require designing a special type of light switch that, won't allow, it'll filter out that frequency until you need it. You see what I mean? And then, So you're running all your lighting in your house off of one power source as opposed to 60 power sources, which are the ballasts that are in every one of them. And even using the LED system like Raymond was talking about could yet even be even more efficient, because LEDs don't require a lot of current or anything to run. nor does these fluorescent bulbs require a lot of current, with the exception of the initial power source that's generating the frequency. But with LEDs, it's a whole lot less that has to be generated. You can take a LED and you can hang it up in the air, hold your finger on one side of it, hang it up in the air near any Tesla coil, and it will light up just as bright as it would if it was connected to a battery. And you ain't even done nothing but holding it with your finger, because it's energizing that material inside there. And the only thing an LED is looking for is electron flow. It doesn't care about anything else. When that electrons hit the material inside there, they release photons of light, and there you got a light emitting diode that has not one but two purposes. A diode only allows electricity to flow in one direction, and it also putting off light at the same time. You see what I mean? So you got a plus going on. By redesigning the way just your lighting in your house alone, you can save an astronomical amount of money. And as far as running the motors and all that, it's just a matter of redesigning those motors. You don't have to reinvent the wheel, but you redesign that motor to be more efficient, to use the magnetic lines of flux that are generated to the maximum potential. You know, instead of having a field that stretches 2 or 3 feet outside the electric motor that's all wasted energy, and causing not only that, but causing resistance inside that wire that's actually producing heat that eventually the motor works too hard, gets hot, and burns up. If you could keep an electric motor at the perfect temperature, it would never burn up. It would never go bad. And that would mean less manufacturing of motors, which on one person's point of view would be bad, because we ain't going to make much money, because you guys are talking and telling people how to save those motors from ever burning up. There's no planned obsolescence there. You see what I mean? The light bulb never fails, so I can't sell no more.
Right. They don't count on the expansion of and the greed of people to want more.
Yeah.
Oh, this one hasn't burned out, but you know what? I want to add another addition to the house, so we're gonna have to get about another dozen more lights.
Yeah. So there's the whole problem.
And people making mistakes and just doing things like you were doing with those transformers and accidentally blowing them out.
Yeah. You know, some mathematics involved in there. You got to make sure you get your voltages just right. But with this one specific idea with just the fluorescent bulbs, you got a heck of a lot of leeway in there. You can bring it down lower, or you can bring it up higher. You can actually adjust the brightness on your light by the amount of input you put on that circuit. So if you want all your lights in your house to be a certain brightness, you either turn it up or turn it down. Auto dimmer for the whole house. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But now you're running your lighting on a light bulb that will never, ever go bad unless you burn that back.
There's one negative thing about lighting or any technology that doesn't go bad, and that's that no one will have any incentive to make better technology than to replace it.
Even that circuit's going to have to be maintained, you know, at some point, unless you can keep it at the perfect temperature where it doesn't burn itself up. But, you know, there's always going to be somebody out there that sees a better way for everything. Maybe those fluorescent lights aren't really good on your eyes.
Where do they get the support if no one's ever needing any new equipment? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
there's
going to
be very few people that are going to be buying if they've already got what they need, because there are a lot. Contrary to popular belief, there is plenty of common sense out there in some areas.
Yeah.
And one of those common sense things is, if it ain't broken, don't fix it.
There you go. I love that.
Yeah,
you
know? That's what my grandpa was like.
Don't fix it.
So these problems that you've been talking about, we should actually be looking at them as a blessing that we got born at a time where we actually have something we can work on. We can modify, we can, you know, update and upgrade, and people will actually appreciate it.
But I got an alternate point of view on that deal there. Okay, so once we resolve it and it ain't broken no more, so you don't have to fix it ever again, then you can move on to the next problem and resolve that one. And then once that one's all resolved and you get it all done and everything's working and efficient, then, you know, I guess then we'd have to figure out more ways to amuse ourselves.
Okay, now you're saying something. Now you're saying something.
But in the meantime, if you're out there hollering about the planet's dying, and you're seeing all this pollution and crud like that, and you're still throwing stuff in the trash and not understanding that when you throw that paper in the trash, that somebody else got to make fresh paper or plastic or glass or whatever, that's adding to the same thing you keep hollering about. You see what I mean?
It's a grief.
Yeah. So, if you go to recycle, go for broke. Recycle, man. Use all these.
The squeaky wheel needs to grease, so recycle.
Yeah,
cut down all the trees. Put all the paper on your trees that you cut down and wave it in the air and say, let's save the planet. Right, come on.
Well, in reality, what we need from wood is the fibers in here, right?
Right.
So, when a tree naturally dies off, you could still use that natural tree as long as you don't let there and wait till nature rotted it to the core where it's no longer useful.
Wait a minute. Let nature rot it. But help her. Everybody says Mother Nature, like she's a woman. That's a her. Help her. You cut down a tree, okay? You build your house. Then all of a sudden, somebody buys up the land that your house is on, and they're going to bulldoze it down and put it in a landfill. Somebody's paying for the bulldozer. Somebody's paying for the guy to drive the bulldozer. They're going to bury it underground, and all of a sudden, we have nothing. Yes, I'm sorry. It's going to hurt the ozone. No, it's not. Somebody's going to collect nothing gas and burn it. Turn water into steam, make electricity, and send it back to you. Come on.
Well, my point is that even, you know, when a tree's naturally dying off for whatever reason, it's still a usable resource, and you don't have to cut down the live, healthy tree in order to do it.
Exactly.
And so by knowing things like what Thomas talked about, different chemistry and methods why you can do stuff with a thing, we talked about last Mad Science show about 10 separate uses that you could use for wood ash out of the deal. So even after you burn it, it still has use to it, you know?
Yes.
Their own conservation of energy, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. But yeah, there you go, man. So where does it go? Whenever you burnt the water, you got water out the other side. When you burnt the wood, you got useful products out the other side. Waste products, even carbon emissions. I mean, look, graphite, graphene, any of that sound familiar?
Yeah.
So, as much as we think we're not, all we got is we're going to run out of crude oil or we're going to run out of this or whatever, you know, if you're standing next to the doggone ocean and you die of thirst, I hate to say it, but, you didn't pay attention in science class.
You got a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your problem is you're ignorant. Not stupid.
You were just talking about burning something or decomposing things, right?
Yeah.
And he's talking about the methane gas that's formed by that stuff decomposing under the landfill. That's actually how they make the most perfect graphene sheets, and the largest graphene sheets they're able to make right now is by burning and decomposing methane gas over a vat of liquid metal, and it deposits on the surface of the metal, and then just peel it off the metal. Because it's liquid, it's a perfectly flat, uniform surface. So
there's
only
the fluid will flow, and will see its own level.
Yeah, there's a real interesting show I suggest people go out and watch. It's one of the ones that was on the Discovery Channel at one point in time, whatever you think about the Discovery Channel. But go watch the show 500 Years After Man.
Uh-huh.
And you'll note that 500 years after man, all except for certain concrete structures that somehow managed to weather the time, even those were deteriorated to the point where, you know, you couldn't even tell that man was ever even there. You know, because nature will take back what you don't use. And so with that said, everything that we've got out here, even if it's after it's thrown into the dump, it gets recycled into the system, you know?
Right.
And exactly. So if you work at it like nature does at it, nature will find its own resources to get work done. You know, if whatever's going on out there, if nature needs to trim some trees, hey, there's some static electricity. Kapow! You know, I just blew that tree up and burned off some brush. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I'll say sometimes she decides to shake and get rid of some of those fleas that keep pestering her when you talk about Mother Nature.
Yeah.
Up in Kansas, they were having people evacuated from the city because of wildfires, and the 60-mile-an-hour winds were basically blowing right through the town.
Well, it may very well have been that nature was getting a little ticked off.
And claiming back. Yeah, trimming and claiming back, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that, Thomas, because I saw a video here about a year and a half ago about how the Florida Forest Service was deliberately setting forest fires to burn off the underbrush. Because if they burn off the underbrush every 5 or 6 years, the ash from the burn-off, the burn-off was only the trash on the bottom that was building up, and the hot ash from the burn-off would actually fertilize the ground.
Right.
So, I mean, is a forest fire a bad thing or a good thing?
It's all a matter of perspective.
Exactly.
If you're the one caught in the middle of the forest fire, yes, it's a bad thing for you.
Exactly. Think about that.
If you're the farmer that owns some land and wants to basically clear out some trees fast, then it might be considered a good thing, you know?
You're right.
Save some people from starvation because people aren't smart enough to figure out how to live off of what's already growing there. Or they're not willing to. Oh, I don't like to pay for that.
Now you're talking. Now you're really talking, Thomas.
Ironically enough, nature always has a backup plan for a backup plan. When there's a forest fire, there's a rainstorm somewhere coming.
Somewhere.
So, you know, that's what all you got to do is pay attention to what's going on out there. You know, look around you. If your yard's messed up, then you clean it up. You know, if you recycle stuff and you really care about the environment, then you practice what you preach.
Wait a minute. If your yard is trashed up, then you need to clean it up. But you need to recycle what you clean up.
Yeah.
Right? Don't throw it on somebody else's yard.
Exactly. or pay somebody to take your trash off so they can turn it into something useful. I mean, do it yourself.
Well, somebody's...
Don't put your sign up says, save the planet. I mean, what? Save your own self first.
Somebody is
I will say, the planet doesn't need saved. It'll survive long after humans have already screwed things up so bad we can't live here anymore. It's saving us.
Yep.
You know.
Save yourself. How are you going to teach me how to save the planet when you cannot save yourself because you're too busy squeaking and squalling so that you can get free government subsistence?
Somebody shouted in the past that we never put any solutions on the table. That all we do is talk. Muddy told one example, just one example, on how you could save electricity and actually use to make compost for your garden as well at the same exact time by putting a garden hose up underneath a compost pile, and when that biological stuff rots, it releases heat, which in turn transfers to that hose that circulates through your hot water heater, and it didn't cost you any electricity to heat that water. The only thing it would have cost you was to pump the water.
And you did not pollute the environment because the trash was going to rot anyway. Whether you put a pile or not, it's going to rot. And it's going to create heat, and it's going to go in the atmosphere, and all of a sudden you're going to have global warming that you did not create. But all of a sudden, if you do what Shaziz just said, then you're collecting that, all that free energy and heating your house and releasing it into the atmosphere anyway, which you want to do anyway. So use it.
So you're basically turning what would have been classified as trash and on its way to the dump into a power source. And that doesn't even scratch the surface of all the different things that we've talked about in these podcasts throughout all this time. Is all the different... all the different solutions. Now, in order to focus it into the holy grail of energy devices, once again, it's going to take brilliant minds gathering and networking in their communities, getting together with their tools in their shops together, and building things. You know, build one for your neighbor and then build one for yourself, or what, vice versa, whatever. And just keep incrementally stepping it up until eventually everybody's got an alternative power source, so that if the power grid ever did fail, it ain't no big deal. Everybody just keeps on going on, they got power. And at the same time, you're cleaning up the environment because you're not sending stuff to the dump. It's as simple as that, man. I mean, come on. There's guys. This one guy comes around and buys burn barrels. He sells burn barrels. Steel drums to burn your trash in. Out in the rural areas, you can burn your trash in a burn barrel. And so he'll come by, he'll give you a fresh barrel and offer to take away your old barrel. And, of course, if you're the landowner, you're sure, take it away. I don't want that doggone thing. And I couldn't figure out why in the heck this guy would want to take away, because surely they'd be piling up on his side. But then one day I just asked him straight out. I said, what do you do with these old burn barrels? And he turned one sideways inside his the pickup bed that he had it in, and dug down a little bit, and he found a nugget of aluminum, melted aluminum, inside there. And he said, I just throw these in another 50-gallon drum, and when they add up, I take them to the recycling place, and it, you know, pays for my gas and stuff. And plus, he had methods by which he could separate other useful things out of there. And you know how much carbon's in a burn barrel?
A lot.
So there was a man who not only was selling the barrels that he was getting for free, but he was actually selling the trash that he was getting for free as well.
Right.
That's a brilliant money-making idea, man. If you can sell your trash.
But you know, the thing is, when you live in a city, then the government passes the law. And they don't want you to make money. They don't want to collect money from you.
Well, and there's a case where if the government's going to claim to be recycling, and they're going to put these little, make you pay for these little totes that you put out there, and you separate your plastics and all that kind of stuff, then what you need to do is make sure that you follow that trash to the factory where they're actually supposedly recycling, and maybe hold their feet to the fire that they are doing.
Make sure
exactly.
They're doing it.
Yeah, because
make sure
a lot of times
lying. They just throw it away.
Yeah,
they're not throwing it away. They're paying the landfill to take it, and the landfill is burying it, and they're collecting money off of it. So when humanity dies down, when it finally subsides, reaches a point that it crashes, then it slowly rebuilds itself, and all of a sudden you've got a gold rush in California.
Well, here's an idea, and I mentioned this idea before. We get some brilliant minds together, kind of like one of those shows, the Junkyard Wars, where you got a whole bunch of stuff, a whole bunch of junk laying around, and you got to build the best trash recycler. And so we build a machine that will literally separate every bit of that trash into its separate components and put them in their own separate containers. And then when it's all said and done, now you got aluminum in one barrel, you got glass in another barrel, paper products in another barrel, wastewater in the other barrel, and so on and so forth, until you could actually take the aluminum over there and sell it to one place, take glass to a recycling company where they could reuse that kind of stuff. You could build a system that every household could own, and they would be able to sell their trash when it's all said and done. It's like a piggy bank. You see what I mean?
Yes, I do. Why are you paying people to take your trash and turn it into money when you could do the same thing yourself?
Yep.
Laziness.
Well, there you go, man.
Or ignorance, lack of knowledge, you know.
Ignorance is not stupid.
Well, there's
lack of knowledge, exactly.
There's a few people out there.
I know everything.
There's a few people out there who figured it out, who actually build fireplace logs out of old newspapers and junk mail that comes in. There's folks out there that recycle
or ropes out
them.
Of 2x4 or 2-liter bottles.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there you go, man. Now, I say just in this show alone, there's all kinds of solutions put on the table. Solutions are just solutions if you don't use them.
Yes, exactly.
If you enact these
solutions... Just hot air until you do something with them.
Yeah. If you enact them, then they actually become productive. They get things done.
They become real. Reality, you know. They become a factor of reality.
A glass company will waste thousands, and I mean thousands of dollars of glass product because... If a windshield at a glass company for auto industry gets scratched, the people who's going to buy it, they don't want a scratch in their windshield, so they will complain and they will want a brand new windshield if it's got so much as a tiny scratch on it because it's a brand new windshield. Shouldn't be scratched. So that'll go back to a section where it'll be called a blemished product, blem for short. And after a certain period of time, those end up off in the dumpster because as the cars get newer, those start to become obsolete. And instead of taking and using those in an effective manner, such as maybe recycling to the a secondary market, such as like a swap meets or something like that, they'll end up going in the trash.
Well, yeah, they don't want to go into a swap meet because anybody who buys it at a discount from that swap meet isn't buying a brand new one.
Yep. And so...
They want to sell new ones.
In alternative energy, what could you do with an old windshield? Because they're, you know, you don't have that particular car, but you got access to 100 of these old windshields. What could you do with that?
You cover your solar panels.
Yeah, you can make a solar dehydrator or, you know, whatever, a solar heater.
Hey... The wind blows, and we know that. That's energy.
Yep.
So you use the wind to generate electricity through a wind turbine. However, if the wind blows across water, it keeps it cool so it doesn't evaporate. But if you took the old windshield and put them over the water so the wind could not cool the water, then the water would evaporate faster and therefore collect on the windshield that was cold on the other side and run down it because you put it on an angle and you would take salt water and desalinize it into fresh water, which were actually, and in absolute reality, fresh, potable drinking water is the absolute true disaster of whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, there's a reason these oil tycoons are calling it blue gold.
Yep.
Yes.
So.
Hold on. I mean.
Essentially, you know, if things were used in their most efficiency and you actually understood a bit of basic science and you can distill even the cruddiest water and make it potable again.
Yes. The biggest single crisis. The biggest single crisis. Right now is not global warming. It is not fossil fuel dying out. It is potable drinking water for human beings. Yep. You can go 30 days without eating. You cannot go 72 hours without having drinking water.
Well, you know what? I'd challenge anybody to put a thermometer inside your car and roll up the windows and just leave the windows shut and then come back and tell me that you ain't got a lot of heat inside your car.
Uh-huh.
Now, that concept in and of itself is annoying because especially if you got vinyl seats and you get in there with shorts on, you're going to burn your biscuits. All right, so it's obvious that if you're going to burn your biscuits on there, that you could actually probably cook things inside your car during the summertime. And
actually, there's a cookbook. There may be more than one, but I know there's at least one that tells you exactly how long to drive, how far, how fast to drive, and how far to drive. in order to cook things that have been placed on your engine and whatnot, too. So.
Yeah, see? But my point is, when the car's sitting there idly by, let's say your transmission's out and you can't even drive the doggone thing. When it's sealed up, and during the summertime, it's getting so hot in there that it's melting your dash panels and causing them to crack and split from the hot day and the cold at night, expanding and contracting. You could use that bit of knowledge to where you could actually turn that doggone old car into a solar dehydrator, you know?
Right.
You could turn mm-hmm. that car into a water heater. You could turn that heat that's coming out of that using those old glass that nobody wants anymore that ends up in the dump. You could turn around and make a solar heater out of that doggone stuff, you know? Using the same concept as a sealed up car in the summertime produces a massive amount of heat. Everybody knows that heat rises, and it will pressurize too. I've actually seen incidents where an automobile had gotten so hot inside that it literally blew the windows out. Have you ever seen that?
Yes, I have. Yep. I said yes to the incident. Yes, I've seen it.
So, there you go. Don't leave your kids in a car, hot car during the summertime, or your dog. It's not a good idea. But you can take that what would have been a negative and turn it into a positive and use that for an alternative method, such as, you know, maybe baking a cake or something like that. Because it's, what, 200 and some odd degrees in there in the summertime, if not hotter? But those windows sealed up in a doggone, especially if you got, like, black interior. Dark colors seem to absorb heat better. And if you ever got in the back of a pickup truck during the summertime on the way down to the swimming hole or the fishing hole and you had your shorts on and sat down on a rubber tire in the middle of summer and you stood up really rapidly hollering wahoo.
I've done that.
Yeah.
That's why I'm laughing. I'm sorry. That's why I'm laughing. I've done that. Woo! Dang God, that thing is hot.
Try to walk across the pavement in the middle of the summertime barefoot. You'd be like Asbestos the Firewalker, man. Alright? Well, we know this stuff. And so, when you know that something like asphalt could actually absorb and maintain heat, long after the sun goes down, those streets are still warm. Some of them still really hot, depending on how hot it was during the day. Because there's a lot of tar and stuff like that inside that that asphalt, and so it will hold heat. So what's to say you couldn't actually take and coil up some copper tubing out there in a spot in your yard and pave right over the top of it with some asphalt, or maybe even your entire driveway for that matter, that during the summertime it'd have the benefits that it would heat the water in your hot water heater, and during the wintertime you could actually send hot water through there to keep your driveway from having to be shoveled.
Oh, wait a minute. In the wintertime, it would still collect heat. You could use the heat from your driveway to heat your house at night.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if people see dead animals on the road all the time, especially asphalt roads, in the winter. I mean, everybody out there, listen to me a minute. In the wintertime, check and see how many dead animals you see on the highway. And in the summertime, see how many dead animals you see on the highway, especially asphalt roads. In the summertime, you don't see hardly any because they're hiding from the heat. In the winter, they want the heat, so they know the highway is hot. So at night, when it's cold, they go to the highway. You're driving along super fast, and you're not paying attention. You're texting on your phone. You're talking on the phone. You're talking to your wife that's sitting beside you, or whatever, your girlfriend, I don't care. And you don't see it because you're not paying attention. You're driving along 60, 70, 80 miles an hour, and all of a sudden, there's this poor animal sitting out there on the highway trying to keep from freezing to death, and you run over it. Think about this, people.
Well, there's all kinds of uses for all kinds of, there's things that you can turn all these negatives into positives.
The animals are looking for free energy. They're looking for free heat when it's cold. They're trying to hide from the heat when it's hot.
If you go down to your city, right in the middle of the city, and you take some temperature measurements, and then you go on the outskirts of the city, and you take some temperature measurements, and you go all the way out to the country, and take some temperature measurements, you're going to notice something that can't be denied. It's hotter in the city than it is out in the country. And there's a reason.
Because people are throwing away free energy.
Yeah, there's radiant energy that builds up in the concrete, builds up in the asphalt, builds up in all the car tires that are sitting around. The cars themselves are actually absorbing heat, and when the windows are all rolled up to keep the burglar out, those cars are getting hot, and then once you roll that window down to get inside that car and leave your door open for a while, that heat goes somewhere, right out into the air right there. And every little drop counts when it comes to heat, so it's every bit adding to it. And so you're sweating your butt off down there in the city while the country boy's sitting out there underneath the shade tree doing just fine, drinking a glass of cold lemonade. You know? And that's why if I was down in the city and I had never known any of this stuff and somebody told me about climate change and global warming, I'd swear up and down, yeah, they knew exactly what they're talking about because I'm about to die out here. I'm sweating my butt off. But in reality, it's just because of where I'm standing is why I'm so hot. If it's too hot next to the campfire, scoot back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, or throw a little bit of water on, cool off, make it last longer.
Yeah. Common sense.
There's more than one way to address any subject. I mean, you're sitting by the campfire. It gets too hot. I mean, why? Because it's got too much fuel. So slow it down, or get back off and let it burn up. I mean, come on.
If you want to find water in the desert, look for anything that's green.
Yeah, no joke.
You know, or follow the animals. They know where the water's at. Unless it's a buzzard, and he might be after the guy that went the wrong way.
All right, what we've been talking about is not stupidity. We've been talking about ignorance. You don't know. Then why are you holding up a sign? Well, go to school. Learn.
There's a device out there called a heat pump. And I suggest that people go out there and study up how a heat pump actually works. I'm not even going to go into it. Just study up how a heat pump works and what is the result of a heat pump. When you're driving down a road, you turn your air conditioner on because it's hotter than heck outside, you create a temperature difference in your car. On the outside of your car, it's a lot hotter. That's why you got your air conditioner on. But that temperature difference is creating something in the process. It's causing condensation to build up. And that condensation, when you park your car, you end up seeing something dripping out from underneath your car. You didn't have that when you started. You picked it up on the way.
Uh-huh.
So you can literally build a car that you can pick your fuel up as you go.
Uh-huh.
You know, hydrogen technology is amazing, and it could be even more amazing with the right minds behind the wheel of putting this, engineering this thing together. But if you're going to be running your air conditioner anyway, you might as well be tapping off to that water and pumping it into your fuel tank, and so you don't even have to stop to put water in your tank because you picked it up on the way.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, anywhere where there's a temperature difference, hotter or colder, you're going to get a reaction to where hydrogen and oxygen combine into water. And unless the earth becomes so dry that there isn't even no kind of humidity whatsoever anywhere, and there is no water anywhere, and it all just dries up, as long as the earth is 3/4 covered in water, you should be able to pick up fuel no matter where you're at, including the desert. If you got an air conditioner running in the desert, you live in Texas, right, Raymond?
Yes, sir.
It's pretty hot there now and then, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, I would estimate that it's probably a pretty dry climate unless you're close to the ocean.
Kind of, sort of, yeah.
Well, the further you get away from the ocean, usually it gets a little bit drier, like in the middle of the desert. But even in the desert, when you run your air conditioner, you still get condensation coming out your air conditioner.
Right.
Yeah, so there you go, man. Even in the worst possible scenario. And if you're like driving around and it's really super cold climate, the heat from your breath and the moisture coming out of your breath will actually build up on the windshield and cause your windshield to ice over, fog over inside,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So even in cold, you could still capture water if you knew and understood the temperature difference.
There you go. If you knew and understood. So, what's the difference between stupidity and ignorance? Stupidity is thinking you know everything.
Yeah.
Ignorance means you simply don't know. So, don't hold your sign up until you know what the heck you're talking about.
Calling somebody stupid because they point out something that obviously isn't going to run your house, but it is a provable piece of science and technology, an anomaly that is occurring, gives you one extra bit of piece of the puzzle, you know, like vaporization of gas as opposed to liquid stream of gas. So which one's going to be better? You know?
Right, wait a minute. I'll need to say something to the listeners. Stupidity and ignorance. Now, what she says, Thomas and I are trying to say, is we are ignorant. We're not stupid. We're ignorant. We want to learn. And what we're doing here on this radio show is asking people to come up with ideas to teach us more than we already know. We know a lot.
Well,
but we know without doubt in either of our minds, we know without doubt we don't know everything. So what we need to do is pull people in. Come on.
Yeah, what Raymond just said in short is essentially this. We need you at the table.
Exactly.
You know, we're not asking people to donate money. We're not asking people for anything other than donate some time and some brain powers, your
and
research.
Some knowledge. Donate some knowledge. Come in here, talk, spread the word. We are ignorant. We're not stupid. We don't know everything. We want to learn more. We need more people teaching other people. We're trying to teach what we know, but we don't know everything.
And there are solutions to every single problem under this sun. And
amen.
If we really seriously want to make humanity better, we really seriously want to save the planet, even though I personally don't feel like the planet's in any danger. I feel like that mankind is in danger, because it's like the fishbowl. If you sit there and keep dumping food into your goldfish bowl, but you never refresh that water, you never clean that water, eventually the fish is going to die. And that's essentially what we're doing. We're polluting our own fish bowl. Now, nature will clean it up after time. Eventually, nature will do what nature does. Nature will evaporate the water, the bowl will be dry, and that water will be recycled into the system. 500 years after man, we never were here, according to what it looks like. But if we want to save humanity and, you know, get this planet clean to where everybody can live comfortably and healthfully or whatever, I can't even pronounce it.
I got you.
If we want to make the world a better place, to the extent that there ain't no people starving on this planet and there ain't all these wars over resources and so on and so forth, then it's as simple as everybody gathering together and learning how to use things more efficiently. Now, if the prices of the fuel at the gas station drop drastically and almost to non-existent, if they get down to where the oil companies can't sell it, there ain't no more reason to fight over oil. You know what I'm saying? And if you want to take down the coal industry, you don't take the coal industry down by protesting them or taxing the heck out of them and running everybody out of jobs. You incrementally work your systems to where you don't necessarily need the coal for just that purpose. But that doesn't mean that coal is completely worthless, because coal is carbon. And so now there's still tons and tons of uses for that coal. If you want your systems to work right, you need to make them efficient. You need to pre-plan ahead to start working our way towards using everything properly, like nature does. Nature knows how to recycle. Nature knows how to use things efficiently. And when you throw nature off balance, nature's going to slap you back down and show you who's boss.
Exactly.
As tough as you think you are, you can't stand out in a tornado and say, I'm human, so you need to stop.
Right.
No, you're going for a ride, sucker.
That was a perfect scenario.
That's all I'm trying to say. You know, we have the answers if we could get the right people in the right seats of power who think critically and with common sense and could say, look, you know, let's hold off on this whole going over there to war thing because, you know, there's some people out there that really have some really good solutions and we can resolve this. And chances are you're going to make less enemies by going over there fighting with these folks over their resources as you would be as to working side by side with them and helping them with the needs that they have. You see what I mean?
Yep, I do that.
You know, you teach people how to treat you. If you're out there bombing the crap out of them, then you can expect that they're not going to treat you very kindly. You know, they're going to reciprocate in kind. You know, I said on the Knights of the Round Table about those two little girls, Palestinian girls, as they said, a reporter asked them, do you ever want peace with Israel? And they told him, they said, no, we don't want peace with Israel. We hate Israel. They killed our mommy and daddy. Now, those two are going to be two of the future fighters in this world. And it's not just in there. It's not just that side of the world. It's all over the place.
All over the place.
And so we're going to fix this thing. We got to start off by, number one, not allowing people with agendas to teach our children history that didn't really exist or science that isn't based on real science, you know, and telling everybody these laws of physics are still theoretical because nobody knows. You know, we got observations. We can tell you that, you know, what goes up always seems to come down, you know, but what about that one time it didn't come down? See what I mean?
Yeah.
So, if you start teaching your kids the way that they should have been taught to begin with, giving them all the options, all the pieces of the puzzle on the table, you'd be surprised how brilliant your kids are. And if they're going to be the future leaders of all these nations, and they need to be as educated as possible, not indoctrinated, educated. There's a difference.
Yes.
Indoctrinated means... You figure out something or you think outside the box, one of those guys who've been indoctrinated in college will come over and tell you how incredibly stupid you are because that won't work.
Right, right. That's an expert. That won't work. You can't do that.
But, you know,
I mean, how many times have I been told that in my life? And how many times have I said, okay, since you are the expert, I need to listen to you. Does that mean I need to go back and undo the other six times I've already done it?
Yeah. That's the thing, man. You know,
you were talking about the compost pile and the heat from it, heating your house. Well, I built, when I was younger, several compost piles every year. And I used the heat to do different things. I'd be outside with my kids, it'd be cold, we'd be having snowball fights, and my kids' little fingers would get so cold, they'd get numb and sore, and they'd come to me and cry, Daddy, my hands hurt, they didn't hurt, they were just cold. So I'd take them over to the compost pile, dig a hole, stick my hands down in it, and all of a sudden, I mean, within a minute or two, they're nice and warm again, they're ready to go back and play in the snow.
Well,
come on.
Nature has provided more energy, more resources than we could ever use in, there's what, 9 billion people on this planet?
In 6 lifetimes you cannot use.
Yep.
In 6 lifetimes you could not use half. You could not use 1/5 of the energy that Mother Nature provides. In 6 lifetimes. The thing is, you just keep throwing it away and you just keep building this machine and charging people this much money for it and charging that much money. Wait a minute. Build a machine and charge only what it costs to build a machine. Hey. We're a capitalist society, okay? You got to have a little profit. You build a machine, you charge what it costs to build a machine and provide for your family. I'm sorry. I mean, people want to pay for it, let them pay for it.
Yes.
They can't build a machine, they don't know how, charge them. But don't rate them. It's, I'm sorry, is that a bad word?
No, it's essentially what's happening. You know, the doggone resources of poor nations are being... These folks, like, especially over in Africa, Africa's probably one of the most resource...
rich.
Got rich. And some of the poorest people live there. And it's a shame, because if society was true and fair, we wouldn't be over there, you know, raping their resources. We'd be over there trying to help them use them resources to bring their level of living up, their living standard up, you know?
Exactly. We wouldn't be giving them food or giving it food. We'd be trading it. We wouldn't be giving, selling their leaders weapons to fight each other.
You know,
we could be trading.
These organizations out there, such as the United Nations, that have all these you know, fluffy kind of dreams for the world, you know, and everybody's equal, and you know, all this kind of stuff right there. They're about worthless. It's about like talking out of the side of your neck. You say one thing, you do completely opposite other thing. Now, if I was in a position of power to where I knew that I was going to be able to say what I wanted to say on mainstream media to where all the average Joes could actually listen to what I'm talking about, the first thing I'd be trying to tell them about is common sense. You know, if you got something that is so energy inefficient, then you need to start working towards making it efficient.
Exactly.
You know, if you build a boiler system with old 1800s and prior technology, into that you build a high-tech version of modern technology using highly refined nuclear radioactive rods to boil that water, and you're relying on those two technologies to basically work hand in hand, then you better have your act together, because if the old 1800 style valve gasket doesn't hold up to the heat, then that radioactive water that will be radioactive for some time until after it has the opportunity to disperse its energy and cool down, you could get it out into your environment, which is something that you don't want. All right? And so with that said, why are we boiling water with radioactive material that we intentionally refine to the extent that it is so highly radioactive that even after it is considered to be depleted enough to where now it is waste, it's still radioactive. And we will remain radioactive for hundreds of, not thousands of years afterward, but it's still releasing energy. And what do we do with that? We shove it off in some corner or a dump and waste all that energy that we created that we could actually tap into.
And dump it in the ocean.
Yeah.
Oh, whoa.
And then they wonder why the ocean temperatures are getting hot. Well, come on, man. Stick your finger in the toaster and wonder why your finger's burning. Man.
Listen to the authorities.
Yeah, they're telling you that the doomsday's around the corner, so you got to pay your carbon tax. But okay, well, we paid them thousands and thousands and millions and maybe even trillions of dollars worth of taxes, and I can honestly say that my tax money put that pothole in the road that destroyed your tire and cost you more money.
So you need to buy me a new tire, right?
Well, no, I already paid for the whole...
You need to buy me a new tire? No. Or does the government that you paid your money to fix the road and didn't, do they need to buy me a new tire?
No, I already paid for the whole...
Right. That's my point.
It ain't my problem that you ran over that hole. You should have saw it and moved. You got a steering wheel. Swerve around it.
You know, yeah, swerve around it, hit that kid that's out there running out in the street trying to get his ball that fell because he didn't have a big enough yard.
Yeah, well, he shouldn't have been in the road to begin with.
I have had potholes in the road in front of my house. that people, including myself, were bouncing in and spilling their coffee on my dang gone lap. So what I do? I went out and fixed the hole. I didn't pay the city. I didn't call and complain. I just went out and fixed the hole.
Well, there you go. That's what should have been done.
Yes.
But what I'm saying is, the kid shouldn't have been in the road. You should have swerved to avoid the pothole, maybe in the opposite direction of the kid, and then you wouldn't be wanting me to buy you a new tire because of my tax money put that in the road.
Where's my tire? And stay off my lawn.
Yeah. How about we just resolve the problems before they ever even come around? How about we do preventive maintenance and we fix this planet before it falls apart?
There you go. Now you're talking. I've fixed a lot of potholes in my lifetime, and not one person ever paid me a dime. But I was thrilled to death because I didn't spill my coffee in my day on lap when I hit my own pothole in my own road in front of my house. The city won't do it. I pay them taxes. Duh. Like you said, taxes. I pay my taxes. The city don't do it. I'll fix it. Just that simple.
Well,
I'll fix it.
And that's how we're going to get things done.
My problem in front of my house. I'm paying somebody to do it, to fix it, but they're not doing it. So I need to fix it and send them a bill.
That's how we're going to get things done in our society. We know our government's what our government is. Now, if you want things done in your society, my grandfather used to say all the time, if you want something done right, get up and do it yourself or don't complain about it.
Exactly. And the thing is, Shazam has said it in a roundabout way many times, when you fix something that you pay the government to do and they're not doing it, you fix it, subtract it from your taxes.
Yeah, send them a bill.
Exactly.
Say, look, I paid you to fix these holes, and they're still holes, and I went out and fixed it myself. Here's your bill.
They're not going to pay the bill, but you send them the bill anyway, and then you record it, and you put it on YouTube.
Yeah, Twitter, everybody.
Facebook, whatever. You did what the city did not do. You did with your own money. You sent them a bill. Now, somebody needs to pay me, and it's not the city, but I'm paying them to do this. Come on.
Well, the resolution to fixing all this stuff is in your hands. You, the people, it's in your hands. If you're tired of the gas prices being so high, then cut back on the gas until they drop the prices down to where you want. Carpool. Just because you got 10 SUVs in your family don't mean all 10 of you have to drive to the same spot. And you still got your car. You still get to go where you want. If you want to go out on a drive by yourself, gas is cheap enough, and you can do it. But I'm just saying, if you want things done, and you want to set an example in your communities and make things better, it's going to be you that does it. And as far as the alternative energy, energy's free. If you can't find it, you're just simply not looking hard enough for it. And if you want the holy grail of devices, then you actually need to get together with your communities, find the people in your communities that have tools and technology and knowledge and mathematical skills, and just build it. Start working on one, get it perfected, and make one for your neighbor. Start off by just supplementing your electric bill. That's going to break down the whole carbon emission thing because you're going to slowly but surely wean yourself off of it. It's not some sort of direct crash that's going to tear the system up. They will adapt. If you do this slowly, they will adapt. They'll come around because they still have a product they want to sell. In the oil industry, they'll still make tires, they'll still make plastic, and they'll still make money, and there'll still be jobs. Electricity.
They'll still make medicine.
Yeah.
They'll still make medicine.
Exactly.
We're running out of oil. The oil industry says, we're running out of oil. We're going to be out of oil in 25 years or 30 years or whatever. We're running out. This is a ploy. This is a ploy so they can charge you more for it. The thing is, they're not going to run out of oil.
That's right.
This has said this many times. They're not going to run out of oil. What they're going to do is charge you to the point that you don't want oil anymore because they already know they're making 3,000 products out of oil that are beneficial to man, more beneficial, than fuel for your cars.
If somebody thinks that we're crazy, then go out there and do a bit of research on the industries out there where they're refining crude oil into gasoline and other products. Also, look into the shipping industry and find out how full those tanks are at one, and then how full the tanks are that are sitting off the shore waiting to come in. You have to use it before they can sell it, right? And it's backing up. Now, if we were running out, do you think that there would really seriously be reserves all over this planet? Do you think there would seriously be so many ships out to sea waiting to sell their oil? You know, and until nature stops breaking biological stuff down, until heat and pressure under the Earth's crust go away, until the recycling of everything that nature does ceases to exist, you ain't never, ever, ever, ever going to run out of oil. You're not going to run out of coal. You're not going to run out of any of these. And if you run out of water, we're all screwed, because the Earth is three quarters covered in water.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad you finally said that. I'm glad you said that, because it's not oil. It's not coal. They're not the crisis. The crisis is water. The true crisis is water, and no one, but no one, is talking about it.
Well, we are, and it's easy to clean water if you know the science. It's that simple. They do it in Dubai. They done it in the military all the way back to whenever I was on Navy ships. They desalinated water and turned it into fresh water and run the boiler systems, and it's been that way for all these years. And even in the modern day ships, they still have desalinization plants, and plus they also have hydrogen ships on the way that are going to be running off of the same water that they're floating on.
You're right.
So, if the military can do it, and the people in Dubai can do it, then why can't the people in California, and even after it rains like flood stage rains, they still can claim that they're in a drought because they're in the government and they got these agendas that they want to get through. And so they want to keep you scared. They want you to think there's a hole in the ozone layer and that the sky is falling and all this kind of stuff, because when that's occurring, you're paying taxes. And you're going out buying generators and all kinds of stuff for doomsday when you should be prepared. You should have extra things on hand just for such an emergency that there was a collapse or a natural calamity. But to live your life in fear and stupidity, that's just a choice thing. It's not because...
Wait. Not stupidity. Ignorance.
Yeah, it's just a choice thing. It's because you choose to be ignorant, not because you're really ignorant. It's just...
You're not stupid, because you can learn. You're just too dang on lazy.
Yeah,
if you're lazy and you don't want to learn, then you're ignorant.
A little common sense could go a long ways in this world.
A long way.
All right, guys, that's about it for the Mad Science Show, man. We're down to the last 2 minutes. Got any last moments of brilliance?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes. Confucius said, the longest journey starts with a single step. And what we've been talking about is ignorance and stupidity. You're not stupid. You're just too lazy to learn, which means you're ignorant. You don't know. We don't know everything. We know a lot, and we're trying to teach. We're trying to, those that do. Or those that can do. Those that cannot teach. Well, we cannot. Only because we already know so much that we know that we don't know everything.
Well,
so we're searching. We're searching for people that know something that we don't know.
It's a gathering of brilliant minds. Bringing those pieces of the puzzle to the table. That's what it's all about.
The thing is, there's a lot of people out there listening to this show that think they don't have something to inject. They don't know more than we know. Whoa, who are you? Who are you? I don't care who you are. You know something I don't. Please, come join us.
Yep. Alright, we gotta go, guys. What about you, Thomas? You got anything quick?
No.
you guys have pretty much said everything. Anything that I got to say, I don't have time to get into.
Well, the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow, if you got another subject that you need to jump in there with, you know, hey, that's what it's about. That's a good thing about the Knights of the Round Table, because all subjects are open for discussion. You know, mad science is, we try to keep it towards mad science, but sometimes it goes into the political and the stupidity or ignorance of the world, and so we try to put it all into perspective to show you that you do have choices, and we're not sunk until the ship goes completely down. So we're trying to plug the leaks before it does. We're trying to gather the brilliant minds. Share us on your social media networks if you like these podcasts. Rebroadcast them, but, you know, do whatever you want with the information. Just do something positive in the world. That's all we're talking about. You know, if you want something, if you do something, then at least something gets done. But if you do nothing, then absolutely nothing gets done. You've been listening to Mad Science. Peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.